And I understand that
February 2011, yes,
novel
innovative approaches to
Indeed. Yeah, yeah. I was at a conference last week, by the way, when all this stuff came down. It's like, oh. What is this? I'm like trying to screw
his email, that was something else.
Yeah. Not to be too sarcastic, or minus the sarcasm.
That was.
And Clugger, he's like,
what? I can be sarcastic, but I wasn't right there. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't see those?
I saw it.
Your AT&T teleconference service.
The
email. Please enter your access code.
I almost sent a nasty grab
no
myself,
way.
And
I
yelled
off
before
it.
I pushed the
really
send button. I thought about it longer than they did. Didn't do it.
But you know, coming from Clugger, it can't be sarcasm.
Well, I wonder what happened. I thought he was drinking a little bit too much Division Kool-Aid.
I'm gonna have another one.
Join the conference.
Board, you know, it's probably got it.
Star. Otherwise, press pound.
Looks like it was written
tone,
by a lawyer.
Please speak your name. There are 1 participants on the call, including
close.
You. You are joining your conference as a participant. For a menu of available commands,
really
press star pound.
Yeah.
A participant has joined the conference.
Stop already. Just put it
on the phone.
Yeah.
We are.
Oh. He's on the phone. We are.
This is an enforcement.
Man, I'm confused.
All right, you've got your calendar. Good job. That part of the agenda.
It's always private.
I know, but I never actually have the full 38 pages until today. Single sided.
You're trying to save trees, are you?
No, not me.
No, he hasn't figured out.
My family
out the whole
owns some stock in Weyerhaeuser, man. I wish.
I noticed.
He hasn't figured out
somewhere in Vermont, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Central Vermont, all 100 acres of it. There's no more sugar maple. All right. So, Tim, when is your birthday? 16th of February.
He looks at her.
Wills is the 18th.
Wills? Well, he's not going to be here to get hazed. Well, I don't think, I think Lors is the only one missing, but he's, you know, plus or minus an hour.
So this is it for you.
Not plus,
pretty,
it's even minus.
Huh?
I think it's plus.
Yeah.
It's
minus.
Oh, good. Yeah, a little.
Jason, is Scott showed up or you left?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I think you actually.
Way later than you get more
tight lobby. The lobby.
You're more contentious.
Just harder.
I don't think I can do that. Three times are.
We'll have to talk to him.
Yeah, no, I have to end. Bring up 20.
No support.
Yeah, I didn't. I left my BlackBerry in. So, I guess those who have printed their agenda, I kind of changed it the last minute and just had some copies. And if you want to copy that to go that way, or you can go with the existing, your call. However way you want to go.
Thank you. Take one of the ones.
That's right.
Sure.
I just kind of changed the way it flows. Same information, different places.
Sign of a true manager.
Huh? Flows in favor of me.
A little pointy here.
True micro.
Oh.
Rearrange.
When is this week going to end?
Not soon. You know.
Tomorrow. Tomorrow is nothing on my calendar.
No.
Yet. So, can we use the new and improved? I'd like to call it that.
I like it.
I actually did this for Hevlin.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I think you'll appreciate my brief agenda flowing.
Just do a couple pages, right?
Yeah, but it's changed around a little bit, so.
Yeah. Yeah, good.
We don't have to record everything everybody says.
I don't.
So what I did on the agenda is
less transparent.
I just kind of moved it around to where action items were those that actually we're going to talk about, and then the action items that are usually later in the agenda, I had it put down so we don't even have to talk about them, because it's just kind of getting... So usually the two Walla Walla Portland ones are the ones that we'll talk about. Then we'll just go into three updates. So 2.3 is just kind of, just so you know, they're still there. It's a carryover. And that's really the only thing I did. That was it.
Organized.
You know how long it took me to do that?
I can imagine.
It took him three minutes to tell me, you will change this and you will do it now.
After 3 years
this
of
was after that,
saying...
This was after the Sturgeon meeting. That was fun. So anyway, that's the plan. So if you have it's a new, two-page stapled agenda here. I like to use it. Basically, it's the first three pages of the other one.
Yep.
It replaces if you printed out the whole big agenda from yesterday, it's just the first three pages. So is there anything?
Since we're talking about the agenda, I include a lot of the attachments with the agenda, but I don't have to now that I know how to post things to the web. I can put those attachments all on the website and you guys could pull them off of there if you want the particular ones, or I can keep them in the agenda, whatever is easiest.
And the agenda also will be posted at the website. So, well, I don't think anybody else is going to show up. So let's go around the room. Introductions. I'm Bernard Klatt, Portland District Corps co-chair of FPOM.
Russ Kipper
has joined the conference.
Hey, Russ.
I'm Ben Hausman, Corps of Bonneville.
Bob Cordy, Corps of the Dalles.
Eric Frederick, Snell Fisheries.
Doug Bausch, Corps.
Jason Sweet, PPA.
Trevor Conner, Snell Fisheries.
Bill Hevlin, Snell Fisheries.
Scott Bett, PPA.
Rick Moody, Corps of Engineers.
Tim Dykstra, Corps.
Tammy Mackey, Corps.
And Russ Keeper's on the phone? Yes?
That is correct.
Hey, Russ. Anybody else on the phone? All right. So is there anything to add to the agenda? Does that my ass get on this one?
Yep.
Gary, usually you have something.
It's on there.
It's on there. Good, thanks.
How do you know what the
sauce on it?
Yeah. So it's Russ, Russ doesn't have the actual.
Yes, I emailed it out yesterday.
Okay. Russ, we're using kind of a different agenda format. If you find out you're not following with us, then I think there's another email you have to look at.
Yeah, the one I've got up is the one that Tammy sent I think yesterday.
Yeah, okay, great.
Yes, you sent it yesterday.
Okay, great. So, Ann, what do you have an add on?
I don't know. Might be on here. Just out of position. I think it might have been discussed in the last time.
Okay.
I thought that was added somewhere, wasn't it?
I was blinded. What was that, Anne?
Crowder positions.
Yes, it's one of the Dalles change points. So it's under the FPP change points.
Oh, okay.
Which is section 6.
Change.
0.5. Count window Crowder.
And I guess something else is the Dalles shad counts.
Yeah, that decision was we were not going to count shad at the Dalles, but NC would be put on the website so as not to confuse people.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Alrighty. Action items. I don't see the Fish Passage Center here, but Jerry was going to put out a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service lamprey guide. I didn't receive it. Tammy didn't receive it. I don't think it's been put out yet, so.
No.
So we'll have to send him a request. Dennis, you're going to talk about the spalling at B2 Corner Collector?
So after the last step on the went back and set a new set up pictures for that pond, there was maybe like 4 photos of people that do not need any of that. I never heard any response back.
I never got it either, Dennis.
Okay. I can resend it again. There's about 4 pictures that were taken in the Google channel of the spalling areas, right? The execution of the way in there. It investigated those areas. A little bit of follow-up to the work. The project, I talked to Donners just this morning and chatting with them and stuff about this stuff. Getting the contractor in there and having enough time to do the work prior to the kelp study releases. Our work window from the project, because of them working over this south downstream entrance area, and we've got that area in water. Because that area is in water, we handle leakage through the sump pumps, and sump pumps push down to the corner collector. So that's, you know, the whole crux of the matter is that trying to do those repairs while the sumps are dumping into there. And the issue is that when we've got those areas in water, the fish ladder, the sumps are running hard and running a lot, and so we can't have personnel in the channel. So the work was going to have to be done prior to. We wanted to do it early in the season, but because of this extended outage in the fish ladder, John and I talked this morning, it doesn't look like we're going to get the fish ladder back and watered up as soon as they would like, which means the contractor can't get in there starting on the 24th if he wanted to. And so that shortens our window of trying to get him in there before the beginning of March 1st. When the contractor is supposed to be available, but our kelp study, we're planning to open up the corner collector on the 3rd and 4th for our release. 3rd, 4th, and 5th. So it's a little bit fluid because we may need one after the next. So I'm working with Doug and Kelly Patterson, project support for the corner collector. Once we're done with that, then there needs to be a decision made. And this Gary and I chatted about this, and I sent an email out to folks about decision matrix on how we want to decide whether or not B2 corner collector or B1 can be used as a surrogate for our kelp passage issue this spring. So what do we label and how do we operate? And so what we've told the contractor is that if you can't get in there, of course we've shortened his window down to make these repairs, trying to get concrete that'll stay in the channel and cure and not be washed out when we open this thing up is getting to be way too short for, you know, practical purposes. So, how long is the window now? Well, John told me this morning the 27th, which means that on February. So, well, no. Right. So, right. Our little window at the end of February, early March is very short. And we say that's not good. Okay. So, our next window of opportunity would be after we close the B2 corner collector and retreat kelp opening up the B2 corner collector. We haven't hit our numbers yet. And so there's about a 2-week period.
We don't know.
Right, but we're going to have to firm that up for another
reason. So Scott will talk about that. What NOAA's looking at.
I'm
up. But we're looking at a 2-week window there historically. Well, we haven't opened up the port yet, but what we told the contractor is that we'll give you about another week to maybe 10 days if you start work, but you're going to be asked to accelerate. You're going to have fast curing concrete. We're going to want you to do that work within a very short window. Unless, you know, it's just not feasible and we come back and we do the work. I'll send you out those pictures.
I need to see the damage.
Huh?
Well, we need to see what it looks like.
Yeah.
How bad is it?
The damage, and Ben, have you been in there and looked at the damage?
No, actually, I wasn't. I've seen photos.
When it comes to damage, we're not talking about deep spalling holes. We're talking, you know, I think probably the deepest one is about maybe 2 inches, and it's on a, you know, they're on, a lot of them are areas where these expansion joints, and once it gets a little bit of a fit, it starts to spall out.
We need to look at that, because it makes more sense to me. I mean, this is something that should be done October.
Well, it's
warm.
Yeah.
Maybe you can be in there and do it.
As long as we got pickers, the Corps of Engineers would like to get it done as soon as we can.
Yeah.
Okay. But if there's other things that are precluding it, and we don't feel it's a major issue for fish passage, then we could hold off because we're going to have an extended outage of the V2 corner collector coming up in October anyway because we're going to be installing the hoist that everybody's so eager.
Well, it's down anyway.
Huh?
The corner collector's down anyway.
Right.
So
right.
There's not outage.
So
not
if wrong. There's
it's
if you guys let me finish.
Spinning stuff.
If I send out the photos again and you guys look at them and say, this is something we're real concerned about,
yeah,
I'd like you to lean
first,
forward with it,
that's
I'm
the
fine
first
with that.
Thing.
But I'm just kind of telling you the windows that we've
let's look at the damage first. And then, because I'm not comfortable with having that thing, having people in there working, and then we hit the count numbers.
Okay.
So and here, now the big argument is, well, gee, you know, we can't do
right.
anything because we got all this concrete curing in the
But
in
this
the
may be a mute, hopefully this will be a mute point and we get good results from our health study.
I'm not going to.
But
know,
we don't know
be
that
ready
yet.
For that.
No,
for whatever. So,
okay. So our work, the work
Steve
that we asked
has joined the conference
is the week after, which is like the 17th through the. Oh, I think we told them they could have up to 11 days, something like that. So that's the proposed work.
11
window.
Days from yeah. when to when?
The 7th through the 18th.
18th of March?
No, 18th of February.
February.
I mean March. Yeah.
March.
No, there's no way. 18th.
Well, yes.
Historically, we haven't opened up the corner collector for kelp passage until...
Where's the disagreement over that?
Well,
obvious.
That's,
so,
I'm
I mean,
telling
that's
you what work window.
The issue. Well, that's an unacceptable window.
Right.
We got
to talk about
the second part of the operation.
Right.
Are you going to cover that then?
No, I'm going to have you cover it. because there was a request for Tammy. It's technically, it's a request for through operations to do work with tag detector. So.
From PFMFC. What they're going to do is that we need to test the new tags that are out. We'll put a contract out to determine who's going to be the next bidder. We have several manufacturers, and so we need to get into the corner collector to test. Sandy Downing of NOAA is going to do the testing. It takes about 2 weeks is what they're estimating to go in there and place the tags on sticks in the right locations and see how they read. And so we need to do that now. We have our bids. We have to make a selection. The next opportunity wouldn't be till next fall, which would be too far along. We need to get the tags to start being made, whoever's going to make them, and not delay 6 months. So that work we were hoping to do already, but the tailwater had been too
in the
hot.
Dry or in the wet?
You have to do it in the dry.
Okay.
And so the tailwater was too high for a while. You couldn't get in there. Then the pumping occurred. You couldn't get in there. There's the maintenance that needs to be done. And we've talked about doing the caulking around the antenna separate of Dennis's work and get that done no matter what because you don't want the potential of something falling in there and caulking the antenna.
Is this
there's
falling
it's around
come
the,
out?
Yeah. There's some caulking around the antenna. That needs to be replaced so the pit tags don't fall in there and block the antenna for the year.
How long does that take to fix?
You know how long it repaired?
Repaired in a day.
Right.
It's a little cure time. A
couple days.
Right. So we were hoping to do that before we did the spill test. There seemed to be a very short window that
could
fit
get that
possibly.
Yeah.
Get that done. Then Sandy can be doing her testing while they're doing the cement work. The two wouldn't conflict with each other once they got the caulking done. And then we'd be out of there in 1 to 2 weeks, 2 weeks on the outside. So that was the 7th through the 18th or 20th or whatever.
Yeah, I don't see that as another compelling reason to have that thing down either. I really don't. I mean, there's other ways they can do that.
Well, there aren't. And so that's...
So,
that's,
I mean, or if they need to do it at all.
Well, they do.
Why?
So,
I'm still not...
Well, how are you guys... Do you want us to pick a tag that doesn't work?
Are fish going to be tagged with these new tags this year?
So it will be as soon as we can purchase them, yeah.
All the fish that are coming down
for the next 5 years,
system.
The tags will be from this new vendor.
And
three
no,
years.
I don't care about 5 years. I care about this year because they can do the work.
This year we haven't ordered new tags yet, right? The tags that we've got.
We could run out of tags for a year. That's okay. We're cool. If they can't make them for a year, no data for a year is fine.
So why is it that they have?
Why is there no data?
You don't have any tags. You have to give them lead time to make the tags. You have to select the vendor, say, you got it, go make me 5 million tags. So
So then they start making tags, and then you start inserting.
So what's driving this? I haven't heard anything about the new tag.
Well, our contract out there. No, our contract expired for the vendor that we currently have. We advertise for a new vendor.
And this tag is going to be different than the old tag.
We hope not. We hope they're equal or better.
I'm confused totally. Write it up.
We wrote it up.
This isn't making sense.
Well, we're looking for new tags to replace the current tag. They're supposed to be as good or better.
But they should be the same. So why would the antennas change? Why are you worried about that? Why not look at a different antenna?
There's five vendors that are going to submit tags. Which one do I select?
Why is the corner collector key to this issue?
The corner collector is the most selective antenna that we have in the system. That's the one that we key off of. That's the one that discerns which tag works the best. And so we know the history of that one. We've used it for all the previous testing of the tags to determine how they perform. It's a very known quantity or known antenna.
That's not a very good. That surprises me. One, and two, why is there another system off the river away from the fish passage facilities that they can use to determine
there
this?
There is.
It doesn't make sense to me, though. Why not? Electronically, you should be able to emulate any of these things.
You cannot. This is where it is. This is the antenna that's used for the test.
This is our test antenna for all the pit tag mm-hmm. that are generated for the entire Columbia Basin. Mm-hmm. That's the test machine.
Correct. It's the most sensitive antenna we run. And so the other ways you could replicate it, don't duplicate the system that's there. That's the one that you wanted to have. All the rest are less sensitive.
And there's no way to bench test this.
No. Give Sandy a call.
Sandy at the right provider.
Well, Sandy provided us like a scope of work.
Sure. And so they waited until now we've got this 2-week window for the whole world's pit tags. We can't do anything until we do this in this system in March of this year. Yeah. What kind of planning is that?
It's awesome planning, Gary. I'm getting a little frustrated with. We've tested this antenna before. This is nothing new. This is where those tests occur. It's the third or fourth time we've done it in that antenna, so it's not a surprise.
That is it to me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it may not be to her.
We've coordinated enough POM. This is not a different request.
It's not an issue.
It's closed.
So it's probably not the best place to be testing it.
It's going to be closed in March anyway, so we're good with it.
Well, maybe. Maybe not. Maybe not on the 18th. I mean, you're talking. First, we're talking the first, week, and then maybe 2 weeks. Now we're talking 3 weeks of the month of March.
Yep.
Have we been discussing fish passage for the month of March through this facility for the last 2-3 years? Have we? Yes, we have.
We have.
It's been an important issue for the region, and now all of a sudden we're like, whatever. We're going to use it for a test bed.
Well, if we could have got the river down, we would have tested it already.
You did. So,
we
still can test it while it's here. Contingency plans.
It is. It's called money.
No, it's not. We don't use fish pasture season as a contingency. So, this is. You'll hear it from Tom, you'll hear it from the others too. I don't know if Russ.
Yeah, I'm
fish agencies, but cut in the fish pasture season for these sort of things. That's not acceptable. So maybe we don't have the steelhead kelts this year, but with large numbers of steelhead in the system last year, I would assume that we will. So we may have the earliest kelt out migration that we've seen. I don't know. But the numbers are there, so certainly it's possible. And to have the system down during that period, or to bet on the fact that the first powerhouse will work, which we don't know, is not acceptable.
Appreciate your recommendation.
Yeah, the trigger right now in the fish passage plans, 2 kelts per day for 2 consecutive days.
Yeah, plus you got to have, 20 or some
22,
passing. At least that's the out of thin air. Recommendation that came up last year.
I mean, right now, I read that paragraph that Bernie attached. It doesn't say anything about a number in the fish passage plan. So if we want to include that, we need to.
Well, I mean, that was, I'd like to see that number justified.
Yeah.
I put together a justification for the 2-2, but I never saw anything on the 20 fish trigger, so that just came out of thin air as far as I'm concerned. No, it was something that was more of a policy call last year, I think, than anything else. So that's really a hanging issue from a technical standpoint, I think.
Without having a hoist on the corner collector, is there any way to alternate the testing sand, either to stretch your testing out over a longer period, but have the corner collector on one day off the next to hit this trigger? Is there some way to kind of break up the worm and spread it out that way?
Yeah, without the
hoist. So you'd have to crew up there doing it manually, but
you've got to have the right wind conditions.
Yeah, so you're kind of taking
that's the problem, is you take it down, then you can't get it back, or vice versa. Right. You're kind of stuck. But yeah, I think that that's a better than just saying it's out of offline until it's done. That's not acceptable. So
I apologize for not being able to follow closely. I could tell that Scott and Gary were getting a little into an item, so I was trying to catch up and pay attention on what's up. So what exactly is the issue that we're currently discussing? It sounds like, if I'm understanding, and maybe I should just get someone to refresh instead of where I think on that. So could someone give me a summary, Byrne or someone, give me a summary of what the issue is?
Well, the issue is fish passage season starts the 1st of March. There's some maintenance needs that need to be completed, maybe, between now and then. There's also some pit tag testing that needs to be done between now and then, but it's all going to occur after March 1st. So right now there's a trigger for kelp passage, and it could open the 1st of March or it could open for spill in April. So the issues are, do we need to do the maintenance? And if we do, it's a two-week window. 7th to the 18th of March is what we're asking for. And if Bonneville gets their pit tag, they need to test them. And how do they test them? Do they test them during that same time? And Gary's not supporting it because it's fish passage season and we might have to be passing kelp. So that's, did I capture that correctly? Yeah. So.
Yeah,
that's where we're at.
Now, we've been aware of this spalling issue and the need to fix that for a while. This pit tag thing is new, and that has, I haven't seen anything written on that. I don't know what committees
we
that's gone through.
We discussed that problem last time.
Okay, I don't remember that discussion. I didn't register then that we were talking about taking 3 weeks out of the potential passage season for the corner collector to do that. But, and I haven't seen anything. Well, the 18th is from the 1st to the 18th. I mean, that's what we're talking about.
I think we have it open for 3 days in that period already.
So what we're talking about is that we've known there's been a building need for some maintenance in the corner collector, and that the proposal from the district is to do that in the middle part of March, which is potential to hit a trigger when we want to be using the corner collector to facilitate passage of kelts is one issue. Now, what's this pit tag work that is also getting in the mix?
There's a new request for pit tags vendors. Our contract ran out with the current one, and so we have to acquire a new or the same vendor. It could be the same, but we need to test and determine which one works in the antenna that's most sensitive in our system.
Okay, so they want to be testing the pit tag detectors in the corner collector because those are the most sensitive?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And, well, I mean, can't they do the testing while it's running if we're running it for kelps?
No, you do it in the dry. You put them on sticks and locate it in different orientations and positions in the antenna and see if they're readable. So you don't
put them in, surrogate fish and run them down through there and see if you detect them or release test fish. You put them on sticks and test it that way? Well, it's one of those. I'm kind of with Gary, is that, you know, I've been having some frustration that we have this in-winter work window to avoid impacts to the fish migration season, and it sure seems like that we've been willing to give a lot of exemptions. There seems to become more and more requests for work outside of the winter work window. I mean, if they want to test this thing, they know when it's going to be for sure dry, and they can get in there and test it. And it's one of those things that's likely not big for fish, but it's another, you know, small little cut potentially for some fish stocks. You know, the lower river winter steelhead are probably what would be showing up that early in that system, and they're in pretty big trouble. They're not snakeware fish, but they're fish that we're responsible for and are in trouble. And that's one where, you know, this maintenance, that should have been done before this period. I don't know. Why wasn't it done before this period? Why aren't we done with that now?
Well, the channel's been underwater for a while due to the abundant rain we've had.
But the,
and the pumping of the fish ladder.
The repair, I mean, we had to unwater the fish ladder. And to unwater the fish ladder, the leakage that is collected while it's unwatered goes to the project sumps. Those project sumps dump right into the corner collector channel. And so while this thing's unwatered, to be able to dump the sumps, it goes into that channel so you can't have work in there. So until those are watered back up and we're not leaking into the sump,
that's the current situation, Dennis. I mean, I think what he's pointing to, and I am too, is that we could have done this in October, you know, or even September, really, when that is, the winter maintenance season for that channel is essentially after spill stops. So there's a lot of months. We don't have to have it all stacked up against the start date. And we shouldn't in the future. This should never happen again. All the maintenance on that thing needs to be scheduled, and it'd be better to do it in the warm season anyway. So
it is.
Why not do it in October?
Yeah, the reason it wasn't done in October because we were in CRA and we didn't have money available.
We just need to plan for it.
That's the reason why we didn't.
I mean, you set money aside for it. So. We can't do anything in October?
I know.
We can't even do that. We can do that. Give me a break. That's not an excuse. And this excuse of the detector, that bothers me too, because I don't see why they can't bench test these new tags, or they're the same tags. It's a new vendor, so you're not changing the tag design. You've got a tag we've been working with for years and years and years. You've got a new vendor for it. You want to make sure they're going to work. Put them on a bench and test them. And there's got to be bench tests available to do this. That doesn't require the detector. I understand there's some risk to do that. But it seems to me that you ought to be able to bench test these things with some sensitivity similar to what the detector in the corner collector. It just doesn't make sense to me. I want to talk to an electrician on that.
They've said there isn't a way, so that's why I'm relaying what I've
Who heard. Said that?
It was
This is Destron?
Downing. No, Sandy Downing and
okay, well, let's get Sandy
Alan,
here and talk about that.
Alan from PSNH.
Okay.
That's but all they're not, they're living is test. Yes.
Well, this sounds like it may be what they would like to do. I don't know if this is what they have to do.
Yeah, my take is I have to agree with Gary on this one, that, you know, the concern is whether if we go to a different contractor, if the read range is going to be lower on these tags. And I think you can do that in a lab. I know electrical engineers could figure out how to test and see if these tags are as strong as the old ones without having to potentially impact fish protection measures. And on the repair, what is the probability that we'd have a big failure if we put, I mean, if we got the money for the repair, just put it in the bank and do it next October, unless there's a significant risk. And if there's significant risk and we got potentially impact fish protection measures. This will come up at TMT about how the action agencies have got to do better planning, that they can't continually rely on the sandmanners to okay these extensions of impacting fish protection measures because we're not able to do adequate planning. And I think sometime we're going to have to inflict some pain to get folks to realize that we have a windows when we should be doing this work, and it should be one of those things that we work very hard on to make sure that our work occurs when it's not impacting fish protection measures. Yeah, so I need someone to tell me that, yes, we're going to go to TMT and say that, yeah, we oofed, and if we don't do this work right now, there's a significant increase to a failure, and so we need impact fish protection measures possibly. And Gary's right, there's a lot of steelhead in the system, so we're likely going to hit that trigger with these high flows that we're likely to get this spring earlier than average.
Yeah, I think what I'd like to do is look at the pictures or even stop out and look at, can't look at it now, can we? The water lines are.
No, you can't get
it. You look at the pictures. And just see what the damage looks like. And if we think it's going to be either injurious to the fish or to the collector to run it this year, then you'd have to get in and fix it.
But I mean, right now, guys, it's not a structural issue to maintain the channel.
I got to continue to erode more rapidly or tear up
it's,
the...
Yeah. So I'll go back. I'll carry the torch. I'll send you the...
I'd miss that.
And then I think we also need to investigate. Well, maybe we put a Band-Aid on it, go in there, fill it full epoxy, or whatever we can do. We don't have to do it. See, that the part of this repair was you go in, you saw cut out these areas, and you do all this stuff.
Right.
So it's more of an extensive
That's
work.
A big deal.
You go in there and just fill these maybe sharp areas with some epoxy and hole put holes.
Yeah, or knock off some sharp edges.
You know, rigorous fix in October. I'm fine with that.
Okay. That's what I'd rather see. And then if not,
that sounds like a reasonable plan.
What's that?
I said that sounds like a reasonable approach.
Yeah, that
will work.
And I don't know.
Appreciate that.
For the pit tag side of it, I mean, if it looks like this is really a bad situation, we have to fix it, then it's available to them. But otherwise, they better be looking at another alternative.
Yeah, and very clearly, you know, we don't want to leave something in there that has the potential to risk injury to fish going through that corner collector all season long.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, definitely that one, it's, you know, we would be likely to go along and take the hit on potential less effective kelp passage instead of potential for increased injury to fish passing the corner collector, which is one of our best routes.
Yep. So it sounds like Dennis will get the pictures. We got a plan for epoxy as a Band-Aid. We can grout the antenna. Regardless, that's got to get done. And that can be a two-day thing, three-day thing. Sandy and Alan have got to provide some kind of justification of why it has to be done in the dry. Is that something that you can get from Sandy? And then we'll also look at maybe options, if possible, with a crane and bulkhead and do a on-off if this gets to that point. That sound like a path forward here?
Mm-hmm. Well, you said why it can't be done in the dry, isn't it? Why it can't be done in a laboratory or...
Yeah, I mean,
that's part of the justification.
They need to have some justification there as to why it can't be done another way. And the on-off thing, that's a good idea, Jason, if it's implementable.
You can do it.
Yeah.
So
that's figuring impacts on the project.
I know. I understand that. I know having guys out there standing by doing that.
Well, we can sit in here and say, oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
I'm not saying that.
You're talking to Ben down in there and Tammy and folks that are going to have to go to the Raiders and say, hey.
Yeah,
I know.
You still working out there or what?
Huh? Go on the hoist next year.
Trolling for that full-time position. Not the problem.
Okay.
Yeah, I can almost promise.
Find a work of hoist.
I'd like to move on now, if I could.
Wonderful.
Go back to your old days.
Easy to do.
So, action item 213 was the University of Idaho did some proposal, and Sean provided information to schedule the conference call. I was not on that, but it has been completed.
Yeah, and, that's done.
Now I can turn it over to Tim.
All right.
I'm happy to.
I'll tell you.
You need a vacation.
We all right. need a vacation.
McNary emergency.
Let's go. I love it. Lahui.
Okay, action item 2.21, McNary emergency bypass operations. I still haven't received drawings other than the ones. There were some drawings that were presented at FPALM like 2 months ago. But I haven't received anything in addition.
Yeah, we need to. You know, we were out there and didn't look at that a few weeks ago. We should have done that. Take a few minutes.
Can you, I guess on this action item, I've gone to Ryan and asked for some information, but maybe there's been enough time that's passed that I'd like to refresh exactly what you want so that I can bring it next month or send it out to you.
You forgot my question. That works pretty well. So did I.
I was just going to say.
So, check.
Minutes are posted on the website.
Nice. Nice move.
Yeah. All right.
That works. You
can pull that off the action item list.
The older I get, the better it looks. Yeah, we just want to make sure that the route of passage, so this is our emergency bypass, late in the season, we say, okay, you know, going the normal way and out to the facility is iced up or we have some issues, so we turn the water the other way. Right. We want to make sure that that's a good route of passage for fish. And we've never really looked at that, explored that, you know, like we have other routes. Yeah. So especially for adult passage.
Okay.
Yeah. And no, it looked like right. from the depth and plunge pool and all that it probably is pretty good, but it could be good to have all the details.
I was looking at the water depth, if I remember right.
That's right.
Okay.
And Fitterwig is a good maybe.
Yeah, we'll update that at Fitterwig, which is next week.
Yeah.
Coming up
quick.
Yeah.
Week after next. That's right, Bill. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is for Dave Wills. Snake River Mop, I think he raised the issue here. I've talked to folks in the district office who tell me that maintaining those ports for loading grain, that's not core responsibility. That is the authority. That's the responsibility of the port to maintain that depth that they have in the port and dredge accordingly. And so so it's outside of core authority to dredge that. Now, I think that the fish concern here is that, okay, does their failure of dredging dictate that we have to raise above MOP to accommodate? And I guess I'm not going to touch that other than say it's not the core. We don't have the responsibility to dredge, so I don't know why we would have the responsibility to solve a problem. That's
a different reservoir level.
That's not a responsibility to fix.
Mm-hmm. So that hasn't been agreed to somewhere.
I haven't been able to find I've asked a number of people, Ann Glassley and folks in our district, on transport up and down the river.
I guess you'll find out.
So I'm sure we'll find this issue is not done, but it's not like I can, you know, light a fire under someone in the district to get the job done, because it's not our job to get done.
Yeah.
So
it's just one action may cause a equal opposite reaction somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the issue is we get the tow butters, or the port folks, or the tour boat, you know, the cruise liner calling up and say, well, geez, you guys need to raise the reservoirs at Lower Granite, go off a mop because we're sucking sand when we go into our port.
No, okay, you're starting to bleed into a different issue, I think, Russ. The issue that I was tracking down was when you're loading inside of a port, when you're loading grain on a barge, whose responsibility is it to ensure that that loading site is adequately dredged?
That's the
port's. It's not the Corps' responsibility.
That's
now,
correct.
Russ, you're touching on a different issue as far as maintaining that dredge channel, that navigation channel. That is the Corps' responsibility. And so and some of that is, this system and the sill in and out of the nav lock. That is what it is, and so I'm not saying that there's never going to be a navigational need to go above MOP. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that right now I'm failing to see why we should have to go above MOP for a problem that's in the port. But there's navigation issues and real navigation issues that the Corps has to consider when it comes to MOP, during low flow periods.
But there's other.
Well, I agree, but last year they came to us at TMT and requested we raise it above MOP because of the issues in the ports. And we basically told them no last year, but it's just going to, until they clean them out, is going to get worse.
The cheap solution for them is to raise the water level.
That's right. Yeah, it's no impact to them to raise the water level.
Yeah, right. So of course.
But I think we can move on because there's...
Yeah, we're all in agreement there, but it is going to come up again. Just be aware.
Yep.
And, last year the Corps was fine with all of us and just telling them no. But it is going to come up, and they do have, political power, so it will come up again.
Okay, got it. Next item is the sockeye counts in the Snake River. And Russ, this is one for you. So just a heads up, what we plan to do is not draw another line on those count windows. We would plan to use, we have two lines right now, it's my understanding. The Coho line, which is at 18 inches, and the Chinook line at 22 inches. We don't intend to add a sockeye line. And we, the intent right now is to use that Coho line at 18 inches to now be a sockeye line as well. So that would be the cutoff of saying
adult.
Jack versus adult sockeye.
Okay.
And so it would be helpful, Russ, kind of if you could make sure that folks are aware of that, and if anyone has any heartburn over that, to let us know. But we don't want to litter up those windows with lines going every which way.
Sure.
So
some of them have added like a 12-inch line, and it's not that obstructive for a minimum length.
Well,
but
18 versus 18.1.
Yeah. It was like,
that's what it is. I mean, I'm not going to put another line in for 18.1.
It was like a 19-inch line.
This is only a Snake River project, specifically Lower Granite Dam for sockeye counts. We're not counting sockeye jacks at other projects.
So I guess, Russ, the bottom line is if you hear this and you feel like, okay, that's fine, we'll use 18 inches as our cutoff to say jack sockeye, adult sockeye, then everything's good.
I'm not quite sure... if anyone got a serious burn within the agency, but to me, it sounds logical that we don't have to put another line in there, especially if what they're talking about is pretty close to those other lines. Is that really critical information? It doesn't sound like it to me. We don't use sockeye jack counts to go into a formula so we can determine what our fishery level will be the following year.
Right.
I don't think it's quite as critical, but I'll check just to make sure no one has a heartburn with that.
Okay.
Good.
I appreciate that, Russ. Thank you.
You bet.
Okay. Okay. Last issue update action item for Walla Walla is just the Dvorak adult fish mortality report, and that was an item that I sent out to you all right after last phone. So that's done.
And for Section 3 updates, we're just going to skip 2.3 because that's all the action items that are discussed in the remainder of the agenda. So we're going to go to 3 updates, and it looks like Walla Walla is first.
Okay. So, Gary, I thought I'd start out with the cooling water strainers. I know that's your favorite. Is that okay?
Upstairs for a while.
Waiting for it.
I've been just sitting here.
Bated breath.
Yeah. Please, okay. Take 3 hours.
Good. All right, everyone just relax. There's cookies. I'm just going to highlight a couple.
You just like let them look at it?
You can, yeah, the thing is,
Let's post it.
I just, some of these I just got in this morning.
Oh, good.
And so, so it's, the only reason I'm, I don't want to normally take time to read these, but this one, it's February, and I just got these in this morning.
And it's your birthday.
And it's my birthday month, all this stuff, so.
All right, we'll let it go this time.
It's 3 years here.
Ice Harbor, though.
Ice Harbor.
If you recall, 2 years ago, February, we had about 400 in the strainers in February. Okay, last year, February, we had 701 lamprey in the strainers. And this year, we've been counting more regularly every other week as opposed to every month. So, at Ice Harbor, last month, so the January 26th, 216, and February 8th, so 982. So,
982.
Is it an increase in population?
Yeah.
It's,
yeah. Write it down.
Good.
Well, yeah, they're all collected.
One spot. This is an index, right?
It's an index.
It is an index.
Hey, do you have a better one?
I could. Do you have a worse?
We haven't gotten that yet.
And I'll just read two other projects. Lower Granite, 469 this month. So that's the most we've ever had at Lower Granite. And Lomo, just check them the 9th of February. And 1,520 dead, 135 live.
Take the dam out.
135 live. So,
what was Lomo was last year at this time?
I have that for you, Bill. And Gary.
Gary could just stick his fingers in his ears.
La, 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 la.
Lomo last year, January 26th was 207.
Wow.
And February 3 was 86. So, some pretty big numbers for lamprey and cooling water strainers. And the one thing, whether you like these or not, these numbers or not, the one thing that is interesting, 2 years ago, I don't think anyone had a clue that February would have by far and away our most lamprey showing up in cooling water strainers. I don't know what that tells us other than it has the most lamprey in cooling water strainers. But it's now consistent 3 years
it's
in a row.
Just in time for the lamprey. Yeah,
sweet.
So you might not think it's interesting. To me, it's interesting that, whatever, 3 years in a row, February is by far and away the largest month for juvenile lamprey and cooling water strainers. I don't know. You can argue about what it means, what it doesn't mean, but it's.
They're
we know they're moving, and we know they're showing up in cooling water strainers.
What units are running? Is it two units worth of water?
Oh, no. They're probably running pretty much all the units.
At ICE, we have five units on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Lomo.
Yeah, these are the MSCs.
So what are you going to do with that?
These are not lamprey adults. Yeah.
What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with
it? I thought Sean Tackley's not coming today.
No, he's up at John Day on a ladder inspection.
Okay.
Dave
Wills. Oh, the other two people are here.
Oh, people that care about you.
Yeah, so...
So, all right.
Thank you.
Look forward to that next update. This is like a Saturday Night Live skit.
Okay, juvenile lamprey samples. Tom, this one's for you. We need all juvenile lamprey samples picked up by March 15th.
Or they're going in the shredder.
Going to the grinder.
Supposedly Brian is figuring out a way to get up there and pick them all up.
Good. So if you can just let them know, but now we've got 2 years starting to overlap. We got last year's. We got this year's coming in. So March 15th.
So, project. What was the live versus dead ratio on those numbers you just reported?
This indicating you care?
He does care.
I was wondering.
At Lomo, it was 135 live to 1520 dead.
1520 dead. So the ratio is pretty horrific, mortality. Is anybody talking about what you would do to avoid this? If, assuming that people don't want to maintain this index, which maybe they do, they'd like to see them dead, but if you would rather do something about it, have they thought, has anybody thought about...
Well, yeah, this is why
these things,
I was hoping Sean Packley was going to be here. Derek Fryer, I invited to have him come to provide that link from the Lamprey group to FPALM to say this is what we're doing about it. I know that they've been working on and looking at options for potential structure type exclusion type structure.
Okay.
They've looked at that. They've looked at some deflectors.
Right.
And I don't know that anything's all that promising, but at the same time, I haven't been actively in those meetings, and I want someone to be here to provide that update. Derek Fryer has committed that next month he'll be on the phone at least.
Well, why wouldn't those people be talking to this group who has the most experience in dealing with draft tubes intakes?
That's why I want them. Units. That's why I want that to be happening.
Yeah,
that's not happening.
Because I don't think you have the expertise there on the turbine side of that.
I agree.
So it'd be good to have people who know, and engineers who know something about that, to maybe help to get some promising ideas. Because I think that I just would need to look specifically in that area, but I don't see why we couldn't develop something to keep those fish. Some are going to go in if they're swimming in while the unit's down, but while the unit's running, we ought to be able to keep them out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
some lure system or whatever, and still allow the water to go in. But that does destroy your samples. So to do that, I hate to not have to listen to this.
Tim could lose the index.
So
we lose the index. We lose this lovely discussion that we have. Damn. Gain about 2 hours.
I was trying to move on from this, but
did you want to
up? Yeah, go ahead.
I think you see
where
he wants to
talk
about it.
Yes, he does.
I'd like
well,
to
not
have to talk about it.
Really cares.
We don't need to talk about it, but I have half the group telling me that they want the update.
We should. If we could resolve it.
What I was thinking this tells us is if we want to figure out a way to collect these and transport them downstream, then we should be up there doing it in February.
And understand how to catch it.
Thinking about a means of collecting them safely, maybe not at the dam, but maybe in the reservoir down on the bottom of the reservoir.
Someplace.
And getting them down below Bonneville in a safe manner so they don't have to go through 5-6 other dams.
Is that after they go through the grinder?
Yeah.
Well, the one thing it'd be nice to know.
Yeah, we know February's the time.
Yeah.
The other thing is, what's the elevation of the intake inside the scroll case? Because we know from our beat data.
You're about head high or so at McNary.
At McNary. All the other.
Varies.
I think most of the Snake River intakes are not like McNary's.
Yeah.
McNary's are like eye level.
Right.
The other ones are like 5 feet off the ceiling of the.
They're higher, yeah.
Yeah, much higher.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we know from our beat data where if you release fish and they go underneath the screen, so we could tell where these fish are coming in. Are they coming in deep? Are they coming in higher in the water?
We could. Mm-hmm. See one up, one Noah's up, one on the side. What's going on here?
You can do that if the unit's running.
So I mean, if you're the one thing we don't know is, are they getting in there when the unit is running, or are they getting in there when the unit is off? And if they are getting in there when they're operating, we have a good idea of what elevation they're coming in.
It's not clear. Like unit 2 at Ice Harbor in February had zero lamprey, but 212 hours of runtime. Unit 3 had 358 lamprey.
I'm going to make my case about this being an index.
I've never said it's an index.
I just heard you say that.
An indication.
All it is the number of, I'm just telling you, the number of lamprey and strainers. I'm not saying it's an index of how many are passing the project, but it's a better index than...
Inquiring minds want to know.
Nothing.
Inquiring minds got to know.
Move on.
Move on. Four votes.
All right. Picking up lamprey by 15 March. McNary, Oregon, adult fishway exit traveling screens. As you recall, those screens are being installed. They're being installed as we speak. The contractor, it's been a pain to get those screens installed. It's more of working with the contractor to get this thing done on time. There's been a number of different issues that have caused heartburn. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that. But the fact is, they started. They have a 2-week window once they start, and they've already started. So that 2-week clock is ticking. They expect to have the Oregon Shore ladder back in service with those screens installed by the 22nd of February. So there's really, from that standpoint, there's really no issue. The issue comes in with the maintenance that was scheduled to happen on the Washington Shore ladder, which we kept waiting and waiting and waiting for the Oregon Shore ladder to be back in service before we took the Washington Shore out of service. And now we're to the point that we have to take the Washington Shore ladder out of service in order to get all the maintenance done on it out of service on the 14th of February.
And do you need an extension?
We think we can have it back in service by March 1.
No.
So we think we can have everything done in the winter maintenance period. The issue there is both ladders will be down for about a week.
So Gary, what do you think is worse? Overlap or push out? Obviously push out.
Yeah.
Then get done a little later.
Don't want to overlap that time of year because we have too many steelhead moving out.
This is the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you'll see a lot of sense of steelhead passing in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we're getting into that. Okay. We're getting close. Tell me again, what's the dates? I thought I heard March, so I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. So
late February.
Oregon
last
Shore.
2 weeks of February.
Oregon Shore. Oregon. Back in service, February 27th.
That's great. I heard that part.
Okay. Washington Shore, out of service, February 14th.
A week overlap.
Back in service by basically close of business on the last day of February. So it's in service for March 1.
Next week. Yeah. It'd be that week, the week of the 14th, you'd be concurrently out.
Yes.
So what's our steelhead upstream passage during that week?
We don't have counts.
Damn, I keep asking that question. These are the reasons why we need these off-season counts. We do have counts. Don't we have at least a
probably
year
some old ones.
Or two of
lamprey industry?
You're on my shit list already.
Really? Yeah, we do have lamprey cows.
You have an awful shit list.
We may have it.
We're talking about a week
into the first week of March.
Let's do that.
Delay Washington until the 22nd.
22nd.
After.
And,
will that screw up anything else?
It may screw up Wasco's.
Oh, they have to be careful. Oh, no, it's not irrigation.
It's power.
It's power. It's just it's the unit.
It's the unit there. It may screw up their time.
We'll leave it this way. This is not just quite as simple.
Because they didn't do any maintenance.
There's a bunch of different pieces aligning on this. We'll do our best to coordinate it to take the Washington Shore out of service. As soon as the Oregon Shore is back in service, we'll do our best to put the Washington Shore out of service at that same time.
It's got a day or two. I'm not going to call them, but a week or so. It's not.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll do our best to avoid that. Right now, I hesitate to full-on commit to that because I don't know what other things the project already has lined up
Let's look at that as the lesser of evils on this issue. Because I know we've got Idaho fish that are going to be heading up, and it's just those overwintering fish.
It's a little bit
early for that. So it's kind of like the last week of February that we've seen the most movement.
Okay.
From downriver, if I'm thinking from the Dallas work that I was looking at, but probably McNary is not that different.
Maybe I can find some numbers.
Yeah, maybe. We can look at numbers if they're not too old and irrelevant. Yeah.
So we'll do our best to push it off, and we'll send you...
Our first choice would be to not overlap, but to extend.
Mm-hmm.
We'll send you an update, let you know how we resolve it. So. All right, moving on to LOMO RSW. I'd mentioned this before, but just to recap, there's...
Good news.
I don't want to overstate this, but some concern about all five transition plates for the RSW. And I had pictures that just don't work on this projector for some reason. It's not working. But essentially, it's... the plate, I mean, the thing's on, it's connected, my computer's on, and I've shut my computer down, I've shut this off, I've unplugged it.
Did you get the cord out of from there?
Yeah, I know. So,
did you give him the secret cord?
Yeah, he's got the secret cord.
And I think he's
It's not hard.
That'll be operator error.
I'll play around.
It doesn't matter.
So the plates are off. Huh?
Plates are all on.
You fixed it good.
Thanks.
Wow.
Nice. You burn.
Sorry.
Was IT a previous job?
No. Formerly known as a...
You got to turn it on first, Burn.
Well, didn't work. Sorry.
Oh.
So, the plates... are essentially not quite as flush with the OG as we would like. We've gone down and measured. Plate one is about an inch off the concrete. Plate two is about 1 3/4 inches off the concrete.
Well,
it must be a NOAA projector.
That's not it.
It's open ocean.
Plate three is just like an eighth of an inch off. So and then plate five is about 3.5 inches off the concrete. So the project was talking to me about, okay, what do you want us to do? And so obviously the answer is fix it. And we have a dive team coming in. Because my concern is that this is kind of following a similar path to Ice Harbor, where we had, which I think no one knows for sure, but I think at Ice Harbor, based on our divers that went down, this was a couple of years ago, and took video underwater, and you could see some imprints that looked like debris that was stuck in, although when the divers were down there was no debris that you could see. It looked like there were some places where there was debris stuck, which allowed water to go underneath those transition plates, and that humming vibration that we had was likely one of the transition plates wobbling and then shooting off, and then the vibration stopped, and we got the vibration came back again a few weeks later. Was likely another transition plate that started wobbling, and then that shot off. So by the time we dewatered the RSW, there were two transition plates missing. So we didn't obviously have that. We have all five transition plates here at Lomo, but the fact that they're not flush is a concern. So my first reaction is there could be small amount of debris. Ice Harbor could have been like a log or a fairly decent sized stick. This could be just something smaller, so it's not as pronounced, but still the same principle. So we're sending a dive team down to do an underwater inspection. Then they're going to rock the TSW or the RSW into its stowed position on the in the forebay. Again, divers down there to look, sweep all the debris off the sill, do clean the area up as much as possible. And I forgot to mention, before the divers are there, we're actually going to do a debris spill. So coordination, Bill. Debris spill is on track, and so we'll flush that debris out, then bring the dive team in, do the inspection, clean all the debris that may be sitting on sail off, put the RSW back in its operating position with no debris there, and then re-adhere all those transition plates. And I can't tell you how that's going to go. The thought is when you clean all the debris and just re-secure the transition plates, we think we can make those flush again. That's the goal. And I'll let you know how it goes. And that dive is scheduled to happen March 28th. Or excuse me, February 28th.
How are the transition plates attached to the concrete so that they are flush? How are these attached? There's some long bolts going.
There's some
in.
Long bolts mm-hmm. that the chief of operation has in his hands to replace.
That's why they're not attached. No
wonder. No.
Yeah.
That's not a good point.
They don't do that good in his hands, do they?
They're very good. They're bolted on.
Yeah, they're bolted on.
But yet they come loose when you put the RSW down in its resting position.
Something's making them loose.
For some, not that they're loose, but they're just raised up.
Yeah, the plates are.
There's just there when you look at all five on these nice pictures I had. They're just they're off a little bit.
So when you lay it down,
are they unscrewed or are they stripped or
right?
Yeah,
that'll tell
you. Yeah, when you lay the RSW down, the plates stay attached to the concrete.
Yes,
because as you're saying, they're bolted to the concrete.
Yeah.
So one of the RSW comes away from the transition plates as it goes down here, and it's the lower part that's sticking up that's not flush. It's not where the plate joins with the RSW.
Correct. Right. It's where it joins with the OG.
Yeah. So when they put it down there, then they can come in and look at the. Adjust these bolts, or
When they get it back. Well, you know what? When they actually tighten the bolts, I think it's after they bring the RSW back in place, and then they make sure it's. But what I'll do is I'll try to get this up and running so I can show you some before and after pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah.
Is it something with
do they use a lash wash?
Yeah,
well, I don't know.
The reason I ask is if the threads are still there, they can put a new bolt back in there. It's unscrewing itself versus it just pulling itself out.
Right.
Maybe some Loctite or something.
Well, there's something that's got the bolt pressure on it. So
I'll try to learn a little bit more about the. I haven't been out there when they do that work, so
yeah.
I don't know exactly how they intend to. Where exactly the attachment point is.
Call me up when you find out more about it, because these are real important. These are the main thing that joins the RSW to the concrete, these transition points, and they're going to get a lot of vibration while the water is running over them. From the two things are going to vibrate at a different, probably a different level.
Is this one painted?
The RSW is, but the plates are not.
I think when are we going to replace it with the TSW? If it becomes a consistent problem, should we start putting in an ICT somewhere down the road we're going to replace them?
A $12 million item with a $1 million item.
Right, before we spend $1 million fixing the plates.
Let me try to.
I don't think so.
You're on your end.
That's like kind of.
Try rebooting here.
take your...
I've done that.
I don't understand. It's worked in the past.
Yeah, I don't... And I've worked out, used it.
Ben wants to know if these things are
plugged. They haven't plugged any other cables except for your computer.
A Toyota generator in your Benz.
Can we move on?
Which one?
Yeah.
Does that make a lot of sense?
More to come.
So I will let you know how it goes. We have that dive scheduled the end of this month. So, you know what, Little Goose Erdic trip status, I was going to provide an update, but I think it would be, it would make more sense to just cover that under change forms. I sent out the change form yesterday, so I guess we can cover that under the change form section. And then, so the last update... Little Goose installation of permanent bulkheads in NPE3 and NSE3. Greg, I'll let you take that.
The casings have been placed in place right now. We've prevented them from leaking into the channel itself, so they can start dewatering the adult fish channel there underneath the spillway. That's starting today. They had a problem with one pump. Yep. But they have two pumps to unwater. They've got a few other pumps that they've been able to use to unwater the rest of the channel. And so right now they feel that they can get this thing in water, do a fish salvage probably this afternoon, and start working on the permanent bulkhead closures here within the week and have this done before the 1st of March. So hopefully it's going to be done.
We're on track.
Finally. Tom.
And it's because I don't have an update prepared. I'll if we can put this on the action item, I will have an update for you next month. I haven't heard anything in the past couple weeks, or actually since our last F-bomb. So I'll have an update for you next month.
For the Portland updates on the Dallas Fish Unit 1 hydraulic head gate oil leak occurred on February 1st. Can we talk to Bob?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a surprise that the Dallas had an oil leak.
Really?
Forget his miseries.
How does that happen?
But you know how to handle it.
Triangle over again.
Yeah, we're getting practice. It was contained in the gate well. One of the two fish units still has hydraulic head gates in it. The other one, it was the lines were all taken out. They're in the process of working on a lift system for this one that does have the hydraulic lines in it. But unfortunately, we still have that in there, and it sprung a leak. So they cleaned it up, and we got everything back in time before we took the north out. So it came out pretty good. It was all contained.
Okay, thanks. Bonneville sturgeon issues. We had a meeting yesterday on most of the people in the room here. What's that?
Time flies when you're having fun.
It was yesterday.
No, day before.
That's Tuesday. You know, it's more days than
I. What did I do yesterday?
I don't know.
I thought about the day before. This is the top guy.
I wish it was Friday. It's Friday.
Yeah.
Anyway, 2 days ago we had the meeting, and what came out of that was we needed to work on communication, but we established the task group called the Sturgeon, F-POM Sturgeon Task Group, which we actually talked about, but this kind of elevated it to it's a must-have group. And on that group is, right now it's Ben's the chair, Tammy, I'm assuming Scott, and somebody from CritFic, Olaf from the state of Washington. We have to get an Oregon rep on there. Do you want to be on there, Gary, or?
No.
Okay.
So that's going to be on it, though.
And Bjorn will be on that, and it's looking at what are our options. Basically, can we dewater... change the schedule, shift it to a 3 or 4 year outage, do it earlier. What can we do with sturgeon in the ladders? It's obviously a problem. Can we come up with some flushing flows or any way to get them out of there? So, Tom, you said you wanted to meet today. I don't know if anybody can attend that.
That's all right. Our guys can't attend either.
Okay, so let's schedule one soon while this is fresh. Well, this kind of got all the way up to the colonel's level, so it's now coming back down through the ranks. Also, the Power Planning Council meeting yesterday, they've requested a update on sturgeon issues, lamprey, pinnipeds, what is our plan, how are we dealing with them, et cetera. So I know back at the district, we're going to be working on putting together a presentation, which we'll be giving at the Power Planning Council. And I'm sure we'll be giving it to others as well. Is there any questions about the...
Ed, do you want to be on that group? Seriously?
Or not? Hmm?
Trevor? You want to be on that group?
All right.
There's a new guy.
The new guy.
We do need somebody. We need somebody on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And if there's any questions for people that weren't there on Tuesday.
We're just waiting for Ben to apologize
here. All right, so we'll move on to dewatering updates. I don't think that's really an update. It's been posted to the website. I'd like everybody to go look at the TMT website. There's the FPOM section. Tammy has got the ball rolling and is putting a whole bunch of information in there. A lot of new things are posted there, and next are spill patterns, right?
Yes.
Soon.
We are working on that.
Then I can retire after I get them posted.
Oh, we'll be taking some time.
My legacy. Spill patterns posted. Correct spill patterns, that is.
Bern, just one other issue on that. Walla Walla has posted unwatering plans.
Dewatering?
Unwatering.
What are we calling it?
Dewatering.
Is it unwatering or dewatering?
It's unwatering.
Our Walla Walla engineers are telling us it's unwatering, but whatever. I don't care.
No. Court needs to have. I've been down
the
road before.
Those plans to get rid of water?
They evacuate
water.
They're also posted there. Okay. In response to the event at Dworshak, we posted all the
updated
of Walla Walla District's updated
Walla
turbine
district
unwatering plans. So if you want to see them, they're posted there.
Unwatering is.
Did you think that I'd only do Portland District?
No.
Is that why you had to clarify? I am a multi-district poster.
Oh yes.
Super. Can you put that in your tapes, please? And how are you going to achieve and exceed that? Is what I'd like to know.
So one thing about the website is that annual reports, weekly reports, those have all been posted for as far back as I can go for Portland District and for Walla Walla. You may see more archived reports getting posted up there. The calendar has also been updated and posted on there. It's by calendar year, not by fiscal year now, so the 2011 is up there. If you have meetings, let me know. And then, of course, the dewatering plans and whatever. Well, Wills isn't here, but he requested that the coordination memos be broken out by project, so you could sort on them by project rather than by date, which is what they were. So I've done that. So go ahead and check it out. If you have any recommendations for improvements, let me know.
And also, that sturgeon meeting minutes will be posted and sent out as soon as Tammy has a chance.
All the task groups are posted to the web with all the information that I have for each task group that FPOM has had or currently has.
So go to the TMT website. Click the FPOM link.
The FPOM link is always in the minutes,
mm-hmm.
which you do get emailed to you, and those are also available on the website.
Now, stepping back to that sturgeon issue just for a second.
All right.
I left the meeting early, and I'm just wondering if I didn't hear all the details that came out of it, but did it come out that the reason for the dewatering in the first place was to protect fish in that system? Is that ever? If the diffusers had come off, what kind of a situation you guys would have been facing? If you weren't doing the maintenance, I mean, there's the purpose for being in there. The purpose for being in there was to improve those diffusers.
Right, and inspect it.
Inspect, and
see
it was
what
there
other
actually
issues
some
there are,
that were loose, and you were fixing those.
Right.
I don't know if that ever came out, that if those had come off, it could have been 1,500 sturgeon under the
right.
diffusers and dead. It would have been a very different
kind of brushed over so. It, but that was, you know.
Anyway,
you did mention the diffusers.
Yeah, it wasn't just an inspection. I mean, there was work to be done.
There was work to be done there, too.
The diffuser was broken. Multiple ones are actually in bad shape. I have some photos that might be interesting.
You might send those around or put them on Tammy's wonderful new page.
It's a little bit...
Our
it takes
page.
A little bit
it's
of
our
explanation
page.
To know what you're looking at.
So
right.
Bert's
not real.
It's real apparent.
Yeah, but I... Yeah. It's
because all everybody saw was those fish in the bottom of that swirling muddy mass.
And the grating that's in that collection channel, it was 2 years ago, we found one blown up in an ROV inspection.
Yeah.
The assumption was we're loaded now in our AWS down to the fish units with sturgeon. Wasn't the case. There were some, but the effort to dewater, not only is it kind of a sketchy process, it's super time consuming. And that happens every time. We just have to assume that's the case if we get a...
I just wanted to make sure the reason for the purpose for doing the work has to people have to understand why.
So Gary, there was going to be a write-up.
We have to write something up,
and that maybe something you want to put in the write-up is the reason why it was being done.
Right. Yeah, and what could happen if you weren't doing
that? In fact, I'll probably be giving that to the colonel on Friday.
Yeah. Okay. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or the day after.
I'm sure it's happened. Yes. Or Mike.
Okay. It's just
one of us, two of us will be providing that information. But no, we'll put something together and put it on the website and send it out with the meeting minutes. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
I'm not working tomorrow, so...
Okay.
You'll get it Monday.
Yeah, it's coming. Anything else? Any research Fitterwig updates, Dennis?
Yeah. Couple of them. One is explained our the Celt study that's going to be going on. The last Fitterwig there, or SRWG, we talked about acquisition of Celts for the study. So I want to give a hats off to Trevor. Trevor has been working with me with OBFMW to try to find surrogate fish, and we found Celts from Mountain View. So we're going to be looking at PGE and transporting those fish down to Bonneville.
They're actually not Celts, they're adults.
Well, they're not Celts, they're adults. So we're going to be able to use those fish. They're excess. We've gone through the whole permitting process. We're going to take the OPMW, check in the tribes. So anyway,
the only thing else I'd have to add, or like from you guys on that, is some study designs. What's the numbers of fish? Condition of fish. What are you intending to look at? How many balloons are how are we going to do the work?
Okay.
I know that that's kind of sensitive. It's Normando and it's all that stuff.
No, it's okay. Yeah, that was included in the scope of work that
I
sent.
All seeing anything?
Yes, I did. Well, I sent out the scope of work when you guys asked for to see the scope of work.
I haven't seen a detailed study design that talks about statistics. It talks about the whole
fish metrics.
Numbers of fish. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's all in Normando's one pager that they sent out originally. I can send it out again.
Is it really?
Well, I attached two
stats?
Documents. There was the study proposal with the stats of how many fish we needed to release, the malady issue, how we were going to measure the metric.
Okay.
And then there was our scope of work. And how we created that scope of work and what research we wanted to do.
They talk about study design,
mechanisms,
and how often,
release,
which side,
how often,
side.
Where we're going to
it's all
it.
In there.
It is.
Okay.
So
okay.
Yeah, and it was sent out with that original email here about the coordination stuff.
You see it? Has anybody seen it?
I can send it out again.
Is anybody up here?
Yeah, I sent it out. I sent it out. It really, what it was.
This is the second one of those.
You know what? I got.
You may be able to check a gremlin in your machine.
Because there was some question about you and I were talking about, and this is I want to make sure we capture that at this meeting, is that we have to have some kind of decision matrix or some kind of decision process for, and I think we need to use malady free or whatever we're going to use. So when we do releases and we can compare apples to apples,
we're not going
to
have time.
What is right? We're not going to have time at the end. So it'd be best to decide on those metrics. That's but really, I think it's malady for adults, and for this study, it needs to kind of be malady free. And what are
well, it depends on the stock that we're working with. If those fish have some pre-existing maladies, we'll have to, you know, look at that too. So
part of the study design is Round Butte said that they would high grade the fish for us. So they would try to provide us the best conditioned fish they could. The fish are going to be, you know, we're going to have a picture of the fish before it's released, and then we'll have pictures of the fish as it comes back. Then there's a 24-hour, 48-hour holding period after that. So we have all the documentation of what marks did it have before it left, what marks did it have when it comes back. And then the malady issue.
Okay.
So
we'll have 4.3 waves.
Yeah, we'll have that. So the decision needs to be made. What is the type of, is there a difference in, you know, maladies coming back from the two treatment groups? Or how are we going to make a decision to say that B2 is equal to B1? Or that kind of stuff. So those are the...
You're going to throw out a straw man decision matrix?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was going to put something together and say, this is what the Corps proposes. This is what we proposed in the scope of work. We wanted to use the malady-free matrix. And we wanted to have some decision from the regional fish managers to say that, you know, we'll propose, you know, a certain percentage difference will be a trigger point to say this isn't as good as the other.
Right.
And we'll want to continue with, you know, normal operations through the B2 corn collector, or they look equal.
Right.
And the malady free is coming back, and we can use B1.
Okay.
So that's what my plan is, to send that out to the group, but initially. First of all, I wanted to make sure that malady is the metric that we want to use, because
I think it's going to be, I mean, to me, it'd be a no statistical difference between the two groups is what you would use, but you want to make sure your stats are tight enough to detect the difference of one exists that's real. So
we're plus or minus 5% right now.
Is that at a 40? Is that typical?
That's with 100.
Normandale is typically set at their 90% level. I've never agreed with that, and I've argued with DeLeap on that many, many times. It should be at 95%.
This is higher. This is at 95%.
Okay.
With
100
fish.
Yeah.
So Jason?
I didn't get the scope of work. I haven't seen it either.
What are you expecting, like, the fish to potentially... 50 are controls.
Because there might be a significant number of fish that die through the transport operation, considering the fish are this early.
We could ask for more than 250.
I guarantee you'll have some. I mean, you could have a lot. That's the one that happens. Because, I mean, they're getting them.
Well, they're air spawning them this coming week, and so then they're gonna sit for another 2 weeks before we handle them again.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, they're gonna add their.
These will be post spawn, so they will be. Basically,
kills. Excess, no pre-spawn. I don't think you're not going to spawn those, right?
I
think they were excess. I mean, they're spinal spawn.
Yeah.
In February and so. These ones are not spawn.
So these would be pre-spawn fish. Yeah. So they won't have gone through that handling stress.
Do you want them to or not?
No, I don't think it matters. You know, we're looking for fish that are a size similar to steelhead.
So
I mean, it'd probably be better if they were, I suppose. But more, yeah. But then you're going to handle them and they'd be more beat up.
Did he say something about air spawning?
In an original email, they said they were going to air spawn some of them in the middle of February. But I can inquire about these fish some more.
Yeah, I would just be cognizant of that mortality issue. I mean, transport
is serious spawn.
I think to answer both all the questions, to get those that statement, the work, whatever it is, a work plan, or to me, it's study design. You know, that needs to get out with statistical design. We look at that statistical design. If we're all in agreement that it's robust enough, then the no difference clause, you know, would be the go ahead or not go ahead to me. If BPA is okay with that, then, you know, that's kind of our usual. If you don't see a difference, you go.
Are we going to more than 5% difference?
Mm-hmm.
Plus or minus 5%.
Yeah, that's going to be the stat design. I just want to look at that statistical design. If it's plus or minus 15%, I'll be a little less likely to agree. But if it's fairly tight, then we're good. And if we lose half the fish all the way down there and it blows the stats out the window, then we don't have much of a test.
Again, is it equal females and males?
They said in the email they said pairs. So it was going to be equal, male and female.
Size would be different. Yeah, so that'd be
right. Just look back, just have all one or the other.
The other thing that we need to be looking at is because B2 is the priority powerhouse, and we're going to be asking for, say, quote unquote, we make a change or a recommendation to be a change. I need to talk to the project about making that change as we start operations in March with Celts at B1. Jim Duffus and other folks set schedules to do maintenance and things at Powerhouse 1 where Powerhouse 2 is a priority.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they have to be ready.
I don't want to be recommending a change that the project's like, well, you need to get
the same. Yeah, they need to know that they, hopefully they know this.
Well, I've given them a heads up, but yeah, the issue is that we do this as a permanent type of operation that we want to. I want them to be involved in the process to say, okay, well now, you know, B1's going to be the priority powerhouse for this Celt work, so we can't plan anything in March for unit outages and blah, blah, blah.
Yep. So you know, they need to know that that's coming at them, yes. And it could be that's the way it's going to go. We don't know.
Kind of for us.
Yes. So I want to grease the skid with the project, especially the operations side, you guys, to make sure there's nothing that would preclude us from being able to put Powerhouse 1 in priority.
I don't know how much that stuff's flexible with some of the planning and contracts and whatnot.
Right.
He has his out of schedule for years.
Oh, I know.
Now.
I
some
know.
Of it can move, but some of it.
Right. I'm saying it may not be this year or they can accommodate this year, but out years I wanted to be talking with folks that set schedules.
So let me hear this again. What I just heard was that we can do the study and decide that we could have a first powerhouse priority, but the project may not be able to do it this year.
Well, what I'm saying is that you may only it's not as complicated as that. I think you may have, maybe we won't have all 10 units available. Maybe they've got a unit out for maintenance.
Sure.
So under a normal circumstance, they'll try to have everything available and do maintenance at different times. What I'm saying is I just want to be proactive.
Okay, well, we'll need to know what the limitations are. If we end up with half powerhouse running and the other half, that's not going to help as much.
You're going to have both powers running. You'll have both no matter what. You've got too much water to fit in for a powerhouse.
Yeah.
A question during the test, are they going to turn the power collector on and off to collect? Do they need to get the IZ tags? Or can they do it with it running?
They'll be able to collect it with it running.
Okay. Some other tests.
My understanding is we release fish and they follow them, come out of the plume. We're not going to shut it off.
We're going to have a discussion about that. Yeah. If we have half the second powerhouse running, then we don't have much of a deal here because we would still want the corner collector running for Celt passage. This is, in the past, we'd either run one powerhouse or the other, but if we're going to have a lot more flow this year, really, as Scott's saying, thinking.
So you got 180. You only fit 100 to it.
Yeah, well, we usually don't. So that's a lot. And you're right. And so we're in a situation, where we were before, we were asking for a second powerhouse corner collector to run, knowing we already had sluiceway, some relief on the other side. We didn't know how good it was, but we were trying to get most of our fish to the second. Now if we switch back and we have nothing at the second powerhouse, and we have half the powerhouse running, that doesn't sound like a good deal to me. So we need to think about that. Yeah, it's just, I know. 5K, just run it. Jeez, that's $1 million.
Okay, so I'll be sending out kind of a straw man for folks to take a look at. I'll send out the information I've sent out before too as well. The other item for the research update is there's going to be the Cascade Island work. It's going to happen on the 21st of February. That's the dive to do some armoring the current pit tag detectors down there, install transition ramp and stuff like that. And so that work's going to be happening on the 21st through divers.
Cascade Island.
And Cascade Island's going to be on service anyway, so
yeah.
No impacts, but just letting folks know that's happening. I don't think there's anything else.
All right.
Next week we have that dive at Dell's, removing all the old USGS leftover stuff in the channel and on the powerhouse and the spillway.
Yep. Next week is the derelict gear, and that's a, we've got that 4-unit rolling outage at the first powerhouse. So during the week, we're going to be removing all the old gear on there and get things cleaned up.
And adding 2 new pipes at unit 8 and 9.
Right, the station service units, we're adding pipes that we couldn't get in last year for the trolley pipes for the acoustic node.
We have our camera going in next Tuesday on the north downstream. The existing ramp, we're adding that camera to the bottom. Did some camera stuff next Tuesday, so that'll be in place.
All right.
Okay, broke it.
Reservoir Control Center update. Anything?
Yes, I did print off the STP. Vern had asked me a while ago to print off the STP for planning purposes, so it could, since we are starting to use that more and more for operational changes. So I thought I would give an update today. I printed it off, and I don't know why only 3 days for some and 10 for others, but normally it's a 10-day forecast, so bear with me. So some of these are only going to be a 3-day forecast, but for inflows at Lower Granite, for day 8, I apologize again, normally it comes out consistently, but I don't know, they're doing some CHIPS updates with River Forecast Center, so I'm assuming there's a glitch. But anyway, Lower Granite inflows, day 8, which would be the 17th, are forecasted to be at 41.26 KCFS at Lower Granite. McNary, again here we only have out through day 4, but that would be the 13th. Forecasted inflows are 172.25 KCFS. Bonneville at day 3 on the 12th is forecasted at 197.33 KCFS. Are there any other projects people would like to hear? To me, it would make sense to do Lower Granite, McNary, Bonneville. Is this helpful for folks, or are there other projects you'd like me to key in the future for system forecast points?
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
That was 3 months March. Did you say March, or was that just...
This is February.
Do you have March in there?
I do not. This is normally the 10-day, and for whatever reason, I hit print this morning, and there are significant data omissions. And that's normally not the case.
This is the same way that Powers brings that out every week, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
But that typically goes... I realize our confidence in it when you get out to a month or 2 months out decreases, but for March, I mean, they typically have that, don't they?
That's correct. This is just the 10-day. For future, I'm more than happy to bring in, if folks would find that beneficial, we could get a longer time horizon, if that's what I'm hearing. I'm more than happy to do that.
Discussion that we just
had. Like Bonneville, what do we see coming?
Yeah.
2 months out would be
what
nice.
Kind of
Okay, so would you like the other, where essentially we could get the STP and use common sense to key that time horizon up to upcoming operations? Yep. Sounds good. Thanks, Bern.
Thanks for bringing
that. Was a good recommendation. And is this the time to talk, or is that later?
Later.
Okay. And the other question I had for folks regarding the FPP, I'll be getting in touch with the printer next week, and I'd like to just verify folks' number of FPPs to order. I've gotten a little bit of a number from folks, what's been beneficial. I guess shoot me an email, or if I could just hear from folks now. Last year we ordered 50. They come in at the cost of about $30 a pop, so we don't like to order and have an extra box laying around when it's available online. So essentially, if folks could tell me if what worked last year worked, great. If you felt shortchanged, let me know. But I guess that would probably be a more efficient way to do it. If you felt you didn't get enough, let me know. Otherwise, if I don't hear anything, we'll just continue with the same order that we did last year.
Did you have extras?
Last year we had extras, and it's unfortunate when you have a box full of FPPs laying around.
How many extras did you have?
Are you? I got rid of all.
A crack load of extras.
Did you
I have
get
a
that on the notes? Yeah.
Well, I would order the same number as last year, minus the extras.
You hit 100 last year.
Fair enough. I just I've heard different reports from different folks. Some people say more, some people say less. So I just wanted to.
If, I want the same number.
It'll all be outdated the first month after it's printed. Use the one on the website.
True, but it's a good desk reference.
Yeah, I use it. I use it. Hard copy all the time.
Mine's dog gag. I mean, dog gag. Mine's scratched up. Mine's stained around.
Folks,
like all the project.
Nobody felt
like
shortchanged, I guess,
yeah,
is what I'm hearing. We just have orders.
Every quarter.
Okay, sounds good.
We need an extra chief.
What if we have?
You didn't get enough.
Okay.
So we
maybe five or six.
Okay.
Whatever it is, to ask
whatever we had last year, gets
us. Sounds good.
But I won't.
Okay. Okay. And that's all I have. Does anybody else have any questions?
Four of us.
When are you hitting print?
Print goes next week, and that goes
what day?
Ace it. We can. There's some flexibility in that, so if we need to talk, let's do that. But we're just putting on the finishing touches, and then it goes to ace it, and then it goes to printing, and that takes about a little over a week.
Do we have to go through ASIC before?
They have new staff, so we're getting. I'm getting a new opportunity to meet new people that I did not meet last year. So it's been a good growth opportunity for me.
The yes. Cover photo.
Yes.
Are we going to do that?
I think
the one that you suggested.
No, I think we have that settled. We've got a great picture that Mr. Schwartz provided of the dolls.
That's very good.
So we saw some ones that were not so PC. That probably wouldn't look good on the
cover.
Not that
one.
Yeah, maybe the Bonneville provided some.
Not a good recommendation.
Very nice,
one.
Pictures.
Hollywood
but,
Squares. Okay.
So.
What's in the squares?
Gary.
A bunch of clowns with names underneath it.
Oh, that isn't PC, is it?
On the camera, we should do a picture of
let's do a jib jab of it.
A jib jab.
All right. Scott, you have anything to add to EPA line outage?
Let's see. What do we move? No, we're still at the one in August for Little Goose. Or is there Lower Granite?
Yeah.
Lower Granite, sorry. And no other updates at this time. Yeah, thank you.
Right.
So the roof. That's next.
Coming up.
Yeah, we're coming. We're into coordination notification forms that need approval. I kind of separated these out too.
That's good.
So 4.1 is the Dalles roof replacement, and Bob has a map.
So for no, that's not a map.
It's not a map.
No.
Target.
Which piece is to replace?
He's got a black light poster. Elvis. What is it?
You don't?
I can't wait to see you at Christmas.
Okay, for those of you who are not familiar, the Dalles needs to replace the roof on the powerhouse. We were proposing to do it August 1 through September 30. 60-day outage, and what they need to do is line
blue roof.
What was that?
Big blue tarp.
Blue tarp.
Oh,
blue roof.
Yeah, no, that's an alternative.
The core special.
What they need to do is take unit 17 through 22 out during that time, so people don't get zapped when they're working under that line. And I stated before that it was only a 1 foot clearance issue, but I was wrong on that. That's 1 foot. It's 1 foot short from the rooftop to this line. But if you got a 6 foot person walking with gear over their head or whatever, it's considerably less. So moving the line is not an option for this. So they still need to have those lines up. The proposal was to bump it back to mid July.
Mm-hmm.
Feedback from BPA was that might be a little sketchy to have those units out mid-July with normal flow conditions, but third week of July would be better, so we're looking at that. I forget who it was in BPA. that responded? Who was that in BPA that responded?
That was Travis. That was, okay. We were trying to coordinate with what the needs of the unit were.
Third, you're looking at what?
Third week of July.
Third week of July.
That only buys us.
Only buys us a week.
Doesn't change anything. You're still through. You're still working through 3 weeks of September doing that. Because
yeah, you're passage. Still 3 weeks in September.
And they're the highest passage weeks of the year.
And that's assuming that they need the full 60 days.
True. But we're okaying a two-week yeah. window, so that doesn't help. It takes us a week at the end of September is what it does.
Right. Do you want that or you don't? What's your most critical week? The first 2 weeks of September?
Absolutely.
Okay. Is it possible to split the contract up and have not worked for 2 weeks? Or is a clearance, is that something you guys considered?
Yeah, I don't think we had that on the table, but and splitting it.
Sounds like the first 2 weeks with the highest passage of the is what Gary's biggest concern
first
is.
First 2 weeks of September is your concern. So either way, I mean, even if we bump it back mid-July, we're still first 2 weeks of September.
But that's where make this separation, they'd stop work for 2 weeks, run the units, and then pick up their work and finish.
That'd be a big help.
The end of September?
First of September, first 2 weeks of September.
Okay, so you're
leave
saying
that block alone.
Now, just go around the first 2 weeks of September.
Were you able to find, before we go down the solution process, is there anything that you found in terms of the dump passage? Can you tell us anything?
I could not find anything. And one of the things that that I'm proposing is if we do this outage, because there's nothing in the Fish Passage Plan right now that says we should be operating a unit down there for adult traction, but this may be a good opportunity when we do this. That we wire it and watch it and see if there is something.
No adults in the river with tanks.
Are they working 7 days a week?
Not this year.
Are they working 7 days a week?
I believe so.
We wouldn't be able to learn from it, unfortunately. You talked also about increasing the amount of AWS by closing the south, which is an interesting idea.
I don't know how we can
blow out the entrance, though.
I don't know if we can pull that off or not.
We need to open up all the sorting offices.
We normally run all three of those entrances anyways at the east. I mean, usually we have a lot of water coming out of that east all season.
You'd have to run the head up another half a foot or something like that.
Yeah, and we can't do that because then it really messes up the rears.
So that didn't work out. I thought I saw that in somewhere. I did see that.
But
another option.
But the floating orifice thing. I mean, not necessarily floating orifice, but an entrance further down on the powerhouse and the collection channel. Maybe pull one of those stop logs at unit 18 or something.
Can you do that?
I don't know. They're concrete, semi-permanent, but they can be pulled. I don't know if they have picking eyes on them or not.
Do they need to be put back?
Okay. That has wood.
Probably not.
They may not go back if they're semi-pulled.
Chunks of.
So this is Russ. I got a couple questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what is the fish concern with doing this? Is question one.
Okay. You want an answer on that?
Yes.
What I'm concerned about, Russ, and I sent this out a while back in response to this issue, is that what they're proposing to do is not have any. Normally we would have Unit 18 running, because that's one of the priority units at the powerhouse for the sluiceway. And in this case, we would not have any units running to the east of 16 or 15?
It would be 17 through 22.
17 through 22 would be out. So what I was concerned about is that you get further and further away from the main entrance, which is the east entrance, with your attraction flow. You may not have as good passage conditions there as what we would normally have.
So you're basically two units further west with the first operating unit.
Right.
Okay.
So, and this is, we're talking September when we have the highest fish passage of the year, and Also, the spillway would be down at that point, so you wouldn't have attraction to the north entrance other than what attraction flow we would normally have. So really the main entrance is the east entrance, and I don't know the effect of this pulling the some of the attraction flow a couple of units further away, but it concerns me.
So this is adult passage
this
we're
is,
concerned with?
Yeah, that's all I'm worried about.
Okay. So then, you know, my second question is, why are we not doing this in this goofy thing we call the in-winter work window?
Well, it's powerhouse roofing, and it's something that you can't really do in the winter.
Okay.
It's got to be a summer, warmest period you can get in.
Hot.
Okay, well, looking at adult passage, it seems like that with warm weather and adult passage, the first 3 weeks in August may be a better period.
They're asking for 2 months.
Yeah, 60 days.
2 months?
Yes.
It's not a mile long.
Yeah, so that's the problem. They're going to start in July. They won't end until the end of September.
Now, Bob, is this the entire roof, or is this just part of the...
They're doing the whole thing.
But how long is the whole thing?
I need to... Yeah, that just dawned on me now. I need to find out if there is possibly a way they can move to another line. But it's a lot more congested down the west end of the powerhouse with lines and...
I'm just trying to see they could keep working in the first 2 weeks of September in a different area and then come back to this. And then,
right.
You know, I don't know if it has to continue all along in one order.
That's a good idea.
Or you flip-flop.
Or maybe.
Yeah,
but the access point to the powerhouse roof is best in that location. But they might be able to load everything up and then just not...
Get it all ready to go. Go for 2 weeks while they're using their supplies that they have. And then if you have to shut the unit down, shut it down at night and move more supplies up. I mean, that's... Take the line off.
So they may not be... Check and see what their sequencing...
They may not even need to do that, but they could.
Right.
If they're just moving gear, stuff, tar, whatever.
Okay, so protect the first 2 weeks of September.
Yeah, that's...
If we can do that, then everybody's happy.
Happy?
Are you happy?
Satisfied?
Begrudgingly,
a little less melancholy?
Less concerned. Complacent? No, I don't think you can say that.
You guys ever happy?
I'll be happy when we don't have to meet. This goes away.
Any other concerns, questions? So Bob's going to go back and see if he can change the schedule a little bit. And
This is still not good.
2 weeks and we'll get better than what it is now.
We'll get figured out.
And look at some other alternatives as well.
But this is a no.
What is that?
This is what you're from your memo. You said another option we're considering is trying to increase discharge from the east for more attraction flow. We may decrease the south entrance. Is there your words?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
You said no.
We can try it, but we haven't really played with that enough to know how well that would work. But we can try it. We can try it when it starts.
Tell me your project, your stuff. Do you think
we can give it a shot?
That might be a help.
But there's no guarantees that we'll be able to do that.
Right.
You know? And we won't know until we get there. Unless we, I guess we can play with it right now.
Play with it now. See how it works.
Okay, I'll add that to the list.
Yeah. See if you can get more traction.
So you're referring to...
I'm referring to Bob's January 20 memo, which isn't very old. And there was an option in there on increasing discharge at the east.
My memory doesn't go back that far.
Me either.
Well,
that's all we have written.
But it would be a good time to test it right now. We'll do that.
Post it to the website.
So give that a try and see if there's some way we can get more attraction. That would be helpful.
All right, so you can go play around with the attraction flow.
Maybe a combination of all these things.
See when you can come up for a best.
Yes. We'll cover
best
it for
attraction
us.
Flow combo.
But I wouldn't go down the road of trying to get another entrance. I think about that. That sounds like a disaster.
Yeah.
Let's not go there.
Yeah. It's not risky.
we starve the south and put a little more on the east. That might help.
Okay, so it's still, this coordination form is not approved. It needs more work. Five, coordination notification forms recently completed for your information.
Included in that is the McNary memo.
Yeah. I guess if you're interested, you can see my computer. Which you can't see, but
here's, mines are good, but not that good.
All this is a picture of the debris wow. that was pulled up at McNary, and so it's
tumbleweeds.
So Russ, it's just a whole bunch of tumbleweeds that took trucks and trucks filled to pull this to remove it from the on site. So the point of the picture is there was a ton of tumbleweeds, and Tom, you might want to come over and just take a quick peek at this.
Oh, I saw that. Oh, do you have pictures of the lamprey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, intertwined in all these tumbleweeds is where we get all these lamprey. Yeah. And so...
Dead?
Huh?
Are they dead?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, there's...
Maybe 1,000
like
or so.
Kind of Chinese salad or Korean salad.
So there's a bunch of these pictures, but the point is, you can when you read the memo, it's kind of hard to figure how exactly are lamprey getting killed, but they estimate about 1,000 lamprey in that mat of sagebrush tumbleweed. And so they recovered,
a new sampling device.
You know, they found them lower in the column than in the higher end of the column. You know, the top, there wasn't much tumbleweed, but when they got lower, they found them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, so there's a new sampling device.
There is, the lower one.
Tim, is this from unit raking?
So unit raking 1C, yeah.
Five?
Yeah, it was unit raking. Each slot.
And this is one slot?
This one is they raked three slots on one, three slots on two, and it decreased as it went down the line.
Yeah, so I just wanted you to see the pictures. In talking to Dave Coleman, who's the OM out at McNary, he's been on site at McNary. He hasn't always been the OM, OPM out there, but he's been on site at McNary for 22 years, and... This, he said, he's seen something similar to this in terms of, not lamprey, but in terms of tumbleweed that they pulled up. He said he's seen this one other time in 22 years. So this, I'm saying it just to make sure you understand the context, that this isn't something that they see every year like this, but this is just a rare event.
Just out of curiosity, this came from a wind event that probably scoured out a bunch of piles. I mean, I've seen those tumbleweeds and the draws up there, and they'll build a 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
Has anybody thought about going in and just burning those things out in those areas?
If it was a BLM land, they have a fenced burning plan. If it's private property, it's a different story.
About talking to people, I mean, I know there's people up there along the gap area.
And the question again is, how far down do you do it?
What's the mechanics of this? I guess it changes every time.
Wind. Yeah. This one came from the north, which was different.
I'm just trying to think of ways you could deal with it. I don't know. You can't really stop this, because the problem with this stuff is that it isn't just on the surface. It's down deep, too.
Yes, it's all over the water column.
And tumbleweeds, they can waterlog, but they won't soften. So
they don't soften.
But you can burn them if you can get them early enough.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys thought about doing some test, checking on the trash racks to see if you have and build up some of these inside? Because if you know from our index from the strainers that lamprey seem to come out this time of year, maybe you want to do some prep for it, like looking at your trash racks and make sure they're clear before you think you might have some lamprey coming through.
They look at the differentials.
But I'm saying, differentials with the test
It takes a long time.
Yeah, it doesn't really show up.
But when you show up a 15-foot change...
Then you have a problem.
We have a problem. and they have required to do the trash racks, you know, before we put the screens and stuff like that.
That's what I'm saying.
Good point.
You want to do like a test one, like sometime in January, just like run a trash rack down like unit 2 or something like that, and see if you get a bunch of stuff there. You don't think that's not showing up on the differential. So it's clear. Right? It's not. Maybe do some for clean, so you see a lamp or something like that, have, and you need a bad windstorm.
Well, that's the key. I'm thinking, yeah, I mean, when you know we've answered for happening that may cause this to be an issue, it's a warning sign that, you know,
do something. Indeed.
Now that we know.
Yeah, it only does. I was like, what level of windstorm do you have to have? She always had windstorm sensors. Like, what's going to be the triggers? Like,
yeah.
50 miles per hour from the north against the
north wind.
I don't know. I mean, that's what, if you know what happened here, at least you know one.
One cube. Yeah, we got one cube.
One spot on the...
Wait, it didn't come from the south this time. It came from the north. So, yeah, it's new one.
You
know,
that's
the thing.
10 miles an hour plus winds out of the north. That's pretty unusual, really.
I know the project, you know, we put some new language in the Fish Passage Plan this year for increased trash rack cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
But, so...
We did, for smoke monitoring, for salmon issues.
But you know, maybe we should add another one kind of standard in, I don't know, mid-January.
When can you do this?
I don't know. I've been scratching my head about this, too, and this is why it's difficult when, you know, if this is something that predictably happened with this whatever windstorm, or just a matter of when the windstorm would come. But it doesn't, I mean, this happens, this type of event has happened twice in the last 22 years.
10-year event.
So it's not something that's completely predictable.
Well, that's the thing, is you get 10 years build up of tumbleweeds and some of these little coolies up there, and then it blows out, and there they are.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can go in, I mean, just, that's the source of the problem. I don't know if there's a way that you guys can affect change to the source, but... Maybe that's beyond the course control. It does affect the river.
The BPA do a bounty on
tumbleweeds.
Tumbleweed bounty.
Ooh. Cool. Tumbleweed bounty.
Every bushel you get 5 bucks.
One's rolling down the road, you're going to have to swerve not to hit it. So you can...
Well, it's got to be a certain size.
Hey, Gary.
I like it, yeah.
Steve Richards. You know, since they had those big fires out at the Hale, it's been quite a few years back now. A lot of that ground, all it really does right now is grow tumbleweed. And U.S. Fish and Wildlife has done some work out there to revegetate it. But big chunk out there gets scalped every windstorm and grows nothing but tumbleweed.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
tumbleweeds are going to be, I mean, they're already common around here, but they're probably going to be even more common.
Oh, joy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just FYI is all.
So how are you helping this?
How am I helping it?
Yeah.
I burn them every chance I get.
You're out there, right?
You know, the states have got a mandate on noxious weeds.
Yeah, these are introduced. Mm-hmm. They're not a native thing.
So I guess we can...
Yeah, it's on federal ground.
Yeah,
I mean, no one can go out there. It's the Hale. It's all no
it's even on private property, too. Farm grounds.
Yeah, mostly in the margins.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I wanted to have this on the agenda is if when you're thinking about this, if something comes to you as far as a solution or a trigger, you know, I'm willing to listen to options here, because, you know, one thing I don't think this necessarily helps, but I know the TSWs coming out of service in June, early June, that is one thing that, you know, does this problem happen if those TSWs are in service in July and August? Probably. But I don't know. One thing that's bothered me as I've been thinking about it, you've got surface passage up and down the river, and then in June, July, and August, you have no surface passage at McNary right in the middle. So, you know, I don't know. One thing that I've thought about, I don't know if this is a good idea, but I'm throwing it out there. You know, what if we put the weirs back in service for like the last 2 weeks of spill season or something, just to clear out any debris that's built up. Those surface weirs pass a lot of debris.
If it's floating.
Yeah, if it's floating.
If it's up on the bank sitting there in a coolie, it's not going to matter.
Okay.
If it's on the bottom,
I didn't say this was the solution.
If it's on your trash racks, it's
if you have a solution.
Is it in the forebay?
If you have a solution.
See it in the forebay?
If you have a solution, let me know.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. You won't listen to me.
You guys, so, you know, this is kind of an annual springtime type deal. And, you know, we all watch the tumbleweeds migrate past Columbia Park. You know, the whole section up there coming out of the reach, and it packs up every spring. So, you know, you kind of have a 1 or 2 day head start when you know the next big migration of tumbleweeds is coming down. I mean, it's kind of an ongoing joke around here.
Yeah, well, I mean, these
things, migration tumbleweed.
They have a migration season too, don't they?
Yeah,
it starts about February.
It's not June.
There's a peak in March. The wind's in March. There's a peak in March.
That's because you got winds, you got less snow, and they're already dead and they're broken loose.
In my front, you heard March. I'll tell you.
What do you got down there?
Tumbleweed.
The strainers.
All right, great. That was really helpful, guys. Thanks.
I'm trying to help you. You're not listening to me.
So,
surface collection of tumbleweeds. Give me a break.
So, seriously though, if you have ideas on changes that you think would be helpful, because I don't like to see this problem. It's happened twice in 22 years. I don't know about the lamprey in the first one, but we know it happened.
Let's see.
No one was looking 22 years ago. So if you have ideas, you know, I'm willing to listen.
Is there any ideas?
I'm gonna bring it up. Catch them, collect them, and transport them.
Tumbleweeds? Tumbleweed transport.
I think that should have been catch them, collect them, and burn them.
I like the burn them idea. That takes them out of the system.
It was highly entertaining.
Yeah, they are entertaining. They didn't go up with a flash.
Yeah.
You
can have like a fence
at
hot spots.
Yeah.
Fence
down. Like a wind
snow fence. Yeah.
Goes down and starts stumping
up. On the dry or in the wet,
I mean, one easy thing, we'd do one more trash raking.
Right. You can do it pre lamprey once you know what the lamprey passage.
Right. So, yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Nice try on the surface bypass in the summer.
Yeah, that was pretty weak.
That was weak, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
Sorry, Jim.
But nice try.
Hey, just
a couple
saying.
Weeks, we'll bring it up again.
Yeah.
Keep trying. You'll get them.
I don't need them back in service, but hey, right. No one else
so
does
let's
either.
Get into change forms six. Number six, 2011 fish passage change forms. 6.1 is Bonneville 009 VBS cleaning protocols.
Have we been over these already?
We did, but some of these we didn't have answers for, and you wanted to move them to the February
FPOM. We kicked them down the road, and they're not ready for it.
Kick the can.
Let's work through these. We still have time to do it.
If we're ready for it.
If you're ready for it. So the first one is VBS cleaning language protocols.
Okay.
And fish passage.
This one just needs to be carried onward. I'm not happy with the where we're at here, but we're where we are because of things that are beyond our control at this point. It doesn't mean that we have to live with it forever. So, you know, there's the issue of salvage in the gate wells. There's the issue of dropping debris back. I mean, this doesn't make common sense that you drop the debris back in the gate well, then you have to deal with it again. It just builds on itself. So it would be far better to get the debris out of the gate well, on down the river, and clean things out. So this is kind of all of a, it's part of a bigger issue with the gate wells at the second powerhouse. You know, there's more to it than just cleaning VBSs. But, and I understand what you've got to do. You've got the safety issues, but I don't think it's the best solution. Do you?
Yes. No. I mean, obviously, if we had the option, swinging out of the forebay.
We'd like to get rid of the debris. So there's got to be a better solution. This isn't a this isn't a good solution. It's the only one we have in front of us right now. So I'm not saying we can't do it. I'm just saying let's not let it sit. Not happy with it. Put it in red letters.
Right.
Not an issue.
Can we spray it off on the deck?
I don't see us solving this today, and I don't even want to get into that kind of a discussion today. I'd rather this be another Ben as chair committee.
Again, yes.
For the future, and let's carry this into the next, to the year. Let's work on it. And I don't see us doing a solution today. It's just
so it's approved for the 2011 FPP then?
But yeah, something, it is approved for the 2011 FPP, but for the future, we need to come up with something better.
Not a task group, but at least.
Just carry it on as an FPOM issue right now, and we just need to set a day aside or maybe even have a separate meeting with the right people in the room. And what I'm talking about is engineers from Portland District, not just project, to look at ways to deal with this, because they designed it. And the project's got it. They're having troubles with maintenance of it. So we have a design issue here that just isn't working as intended. And to me, that's back to Fairway as well as FPOM.
So you're thinking traveling speed?
I don't know. I don't know what, a better way to clean these things, but dumping the debris back in the gate well.
Yeah, it's not working.
Yeah, and then we got to pull the backstream because of the debris in there, then all the fish in the gate will end up down in the unit. That's not what we're trying to do with the JBS system. So the other alternative to that is to gate well dip every one of these things every time you clean the debris off, and that's not the best way to handle this either. So.
Bernie, I'd suggest that the stream cleaning alternatives gets involved into our alternative study, because part of the reason that we're down this road is because the team recommended the new VBS is more water up the slot, anything associated with that. So this issue needs to come back and be part of the alternative study that we're looking to. And so if something is out there that's not working, it's not part of something that we've recommended, okay, we need to incorporate that in our new design or design changes to make it better.
And who's the tech lead on that?
Well, Randy Lee is.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm on the team.
All right.
It's an engineer. So let's have FPOM make a recommendation that this gets added to the technical work that we're doing right now in the alternative study and get something moving on this.
I think everybody's fine with that.
Yeah, I think my comment in here is exactly
probably the best way to approach this.
Yep.
So we're done. Now,
kick the can.
We will. Can you give the heads up to the team?
Yep.
And we'll also send an email to the reminder. Okay. Good.
Thank you.
The next one is Bonneville 12, which is the
Benner.
Dave Benner's proposed language of auxiliary water system failure malfunction. So it's that whole process.
The floating orifices.
Floating orifice gates. Yeah.
But the concern here was how long it took. We deleted that entire section. So then the concern that you all had was how long does it take to install stab plates? And in talking to Verisich, it takes at least 2 to 3 days, a better part of a week, work week, to get those stab plates in.
And we all we had the discussion that it probably would take a week, I recall.
Mm-hmm.
It was our guess.
So it does take
a week.
What was our criteria for having to do that?
So what the language would now say is that if one or both fish units go out of service, they would follow table bond 12 or 13, whichever it is, with the emergency operations. And then if it happens between March and September, or September and March, whichever way it went, it would be brought to FPOM for a discussion as to what needs to happen. So if they knew the fish unit was, both fish units were going to be down for an extended period of time, FPOM would recommend putting in stab plates. And if it was only going to be a couple days, would it be worth putting in the stab plates?
No,
so
it's the couple
it
days versus
FPOM.
A couple of months. You know, between is a week enough? Is it 2 weeks?
Yeah.
That'll be the discussion that we'll have to have, I guess. But as far as the which entrances and all that, I think that's been resolved.
Yes, that has been resolved. It was just the step length that needed to be.
It was the time.
Okay.
So can we consider this one final?
Yeah.
Great.
There's language in the plan then now that says.
Yeah.
Says what you just said. Okay.
Yes, it does. That's right.
Okay. Okay. Good.
All right. Bylaw 14 unit operation range.
Okay.
I didn't see that. What's included in this language? I don't have anything in front of me.
This was CritFix. Turbines will operate. This was changing the mid to upper range at Powerhouse 1 with the mid to lower range at Powerhouse 2. And this was going to tie in with whatever the team was recommending as far as shifting the operating range for Powerhouse 1.
Right.
I think that's why this.
Right, but right now the TSP team is, we got Gary's trip report, I have my trip report notes. TSP has been tasked to come up with recommendations. One is recommending a different operating range or shifting the range of Powerhouse 1.
Shifting it upward, yeah.
The other one is the Powerhouse 2 operating range and putting a
soft,
more narrow operating range due to
the bottom end of that.
And so, but TSP is in the process of writing a white paper that supports taking that. So, you know, how quickly
can we get? We can't get that into the FPP next week. It sounds like.
I don't think it's something that's going to have to be proposed to the region. It has to be thoroughly vetted with them. Just because I'm sure people are going to be sensitive about narrowing ranges of turbine operations, shifting turbine operations from what normally has been historically the 1% range, especially the Powerhouse 1 issue. So.
It's a pretty simple thing. I mean,
We think it's a simple thing, too, but I think there's a process where.
There is. It's here. It's right here. I mean, we need to get that into this in the O&M. That's the place. This is the process. Change form is the vehicle for that for doing that. So we need a recommendation
There's going to be the white paper and the recommendation from the Turbine Survival Group for both issues.
One you can stamp my trip report the white paper, then let's get that.
Well, we would like to. That's going to be an appendix.
I just want to make sure we don't end up next year.
No, our plan is to have something.
This could help us out in March.
We need to identify it possibly as something we want to do in the fall or somewhere. It has to. If we don't write it in now that there's a possible change, it won't be done next year.
Yeah, we don't want that. We want to change that.
So
and this is an issue.
Deadlines on pop? Stuff.
Friday.
The last I heard was 18 February was the targeted date for external
that's
review.
That's next Friday.
Right. If we don't have something that points out that there's something in consideration.
It's that issue. So let's make sure that at least that's in there. Because I think the issue here is going to be. I don't know if BPA is going to have an issue so much. As it's going to be, what we're recommending is to exceed the 1% criteria for the first time as a standard operating range for one of our powerhouses.
Yes.
So that, even though it's okay in the biop to do that, we've been anticipating this for years, it's still the first time that we've actually done that. So that may be where the pushback comes from, but if it's laid out, so that this is a fish benefit.
Why don't you tie it with the evaluation of Bonneville? Since you're going to do the performance evaluation.
Well, I think it should be. It should be part of the operation. That's a good point.
And so you could tie it to that and say, we'll look at it and then implement as needed. That might get you out of the hard and fast thing. Say this
such as you can. I mean, you know how sensitive that is.
If it's research and that kind of stuff, that might give you a little more flexibility.
Oh, there you go. There's your other vehicle. I just think it'll help us a little bit at the first Powerhouse, too, if we have more capacity over there in March. That would be better, too.
K and a half.
About 2K per unit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's pretty significant.
As far as language for the FOP, I think he's actually
we can do it
getting
March
sent
right.
out today. To,
that's
to
a good point.
For review.
That's for review.
Yeah. Okay. Finalized for March.
Yeah. Okay. So the point is language should be like developed in the next week. If you want it in the FOP, it's going out for review like today, I think. So
let's get it doesn't have to be the just need the FOP just has to say that we're working on this in this committee.
Right.
And that there's a proposal on the table to change the operating range of both units, first and second powerhouse, but the second powerhouse is, again, that's kind of squishy. The first, I think, is a fairly, we know what we want to do there.
In terms of this change form, which was submitted by Tom, where it's kind of formalizing the mid to lower range for Powerhouse 2, which we usually get the request anyway, are we okay with this language until we get new language for changing that operating range? Or, because right now, until we have new language for shifting outside the 1%, we're going to operate within the 1%.
This won't affect that, so that's another issue.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it may affect how much these guys approve of it. But
well, it's a soft constraint, but I mean,
it is.
So, and we've done it for the last 2 years. So
we're just
okay
trying to keep away from the bottom, the very bottom end, and the very top.
Yours is only a two-tenths of a K difference on the bottom, but it's a separate issue. We're okay with the change form
for the top.
Okay.
You are
so
okay,
the change
because
form, I can say it.
That was one of the issues you were going to
okay, good
check back and
so
that, see if you can do that.
Soft constraint, we can go back.
It's
within
the lower range.
The range.
No, this is the
upper.
Staying away from the upper
range
for the gate well hydraulic issue. That's what this is all about.
Okay. You go through the whole progression of the second powerhouse in the mid-range, load the first powerhouse completely, come back and reload the second powerhouse.
And the more capacity of the first we have,
the less
we have to do this.
Okay. Well, and the question is, if we had that much flow, would you guys be remiss if we increased flow to the gas cap and then the powerhouse too? So you're not at the gas cap, so you're not treating your standards.
You can guess what our response is.
I'm saying, if you're at that level, you're at like 300 god-ass awful in the river. Are you guys going to really quibble over 5K or something like that at powerhouse 2 at 350, 380 in the river?
Well,
really?
We'll consider it as it comes up, but I can't
really
give you an answer right now.
Really?
It's not my head I'm wearing.
Looks
like it.
Move on.
It's $1 million.
Right, arm wrestle.
Yeah, $1 million.
It's $1 million.
It was a million. Generation sell at that.
All right. Okay. So bond 14 unit operation is finalized as written in the notes. Now, the Dalles trash rack raking number 5.
Came back with some language that you just need to.
Bob's
got some language.
Which one is this?
This is the recommendation was to ROV a two units that have a lot of run time on them.
Nope.
The first two weeks of June in lieu of doing the raking requirement that was in
18 and 2. Yeah.
On second thought, 2 might not be the best choice because we still would have to close unit 1 sluice way skimmer gates. So we'll probably maybe try to find another the next unit that we can actually ROV without having to close the sluice gates and try to avoid that. But bottom line is we'll ROV 2 units that have the most runtime. One will be 18 and the other one will be whatever, and determine what we have for debris and then figure from there if we need to rake.
So
this is in lieu of raking. Unit 1 through main unit 5.
That was the previous request.
So the previous request was to do that. You're saying you'll take a look at 2 units, which don't include necessarily those, and make a determination.
Yep. And that was the recommendation when we discussed it at the FPP meeting.
I remember talking about using the ROV. I didn't remember that we were looking at just those 2 units. But
well, we could do more, too.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was thinking, is that we would take a look at 1 through 5, and if you run the ROV over, at least to some degree. You don't have to do it. Maybe you do 1 and 18 or 2 and 18 fairly extensively because of the runtime, and then you just run the ROV up past the others to see, not in a sample grid, but in just a check to make sure.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that we don't miss anything. We just talked about a major problem with tumbleweeds on one dam upriver, and now we're talking about
Okay.
Not looking at others. So.
Okay. So you know that if we do unit one, two,
you're going to have to take the sluice way out.
Maybe three, we'll have to take sluice way skimmer gate one
out.
Just close it.
Runner up while you're doing it.
Yep.
And when are we doing this?
So the skimmer at 18
first
will be
first 2 weeks of June, first 15 days.
So you wouldn't do that? You wouldn't have a close? Would you have a closed all 15 days? Or just do it for
No. Just for the time we're in there, yeah.
It's a low time of passage.
All right.
Juvenile passage. That's just a guarantee that we don't have something going on.
Okay.
So you need to rewrite this a little bit.
Well, I can rewrite it now.
Yeah, we can do it right now.
You don't have a choice. If you're going to do what you're proposing, the most used units, that's always going to be 1 and 18.
It would be 1 and 18, yeah. But if we do 1, then we're messing with fish units. We don't want to do that, so then we're leaning towards 2, but 2 is still messing with the sluice way gates. Yeah, the skimmer gates.
Skimmer gates, and if you do 3... You know, it's not the most used unit in the...
It wouldn't be.
So, is it going to be 2.5.18 minimum?
Well, 5, yeah.
Well,
the
5,
other
one. Yeah. 2.5. Yeah, 5 is running all the time.
There's 3 of them. Maybe, I don't know, Bob, it's, you know we're
so
trying
So 5 and 18 for sure, and then we'll just try to, we'll get one as close as we can and
to the,
unit 1 through 5.
You need to get one down on that end just because the debris distribution could be quite different down there. Plus you're loading those blocks down there more than you're loading the blocks
down
the super end. So you definitely need to do 1 through 5 somehow.
And
look at one.
And that skimmer down there is I mean, any debris comes down there near unit 5, that's definitely going through the sluice way. If it's got any float to it at all. But yeah, we'll get one of the units 1 through 5. How's that? One of the units 1 through 5.
One of the units 1 through 5. At least look at it carefully, and then you can do a drive-by look at some of the others. Do 5 well. Do 8 well, and 18 well.
Yeah.
Those carefully. And then if you see problems, then you can go in more thorough.
So units.
That makes sense.
18.
Eight, 18, and one
and
of the units in 1 through 5
one
was
unit,
most runtime without taking down the sluice way.
Without taking out fish unit.
Between 2 and 5.
So it's probably 3 is going to be the most used unless it's down for whatever reason.
So
5, 8, 18.
Let's say 3.
How about 18, 8, 5, or 3?
Okay.
A minimum. Inspection of.
Yeah, just that the 1 through 5 block, I think you just have to pick the one that makes the most sense. So I would just say that. Leave it up to the bio's discretion.
Okay.
Whatever makes the most sense based on runtime and least impact fish.
So 18, 8 and one unit between 1 through 5 with the most runtime.
Yeah, just I'd leave it up to his discretion.
At the discretion
of fisheries.
Of the fisheries
Yeah.
So you're doing the change now?
Yeah.
Oh, you do? All right.
Does that make sense?
Unless you want to
that
do
works.
It. You want to do it?
No, I trust you guys.
You okay down there? Slim?
Slim.
Is that Slim Pickens? Worm? Is that your nickname? Worm?
Yeah, that didn't stick very long.
I'm trying to keep it to stick. Sure, I'll get one too. Okay, so you want to reread that just so you guys all can hear it and say, sounds good?
Wow, it'd be nice to have some screen.
Yeah,
wow. All right. Mm-hmm. Units 3 or any other unit 1 through 5 which minimizes fish impacts. 8 and 18 will be inspected by ROV between June 1 and June 15. This will determine if there is a debris buildup on the trash racks. If so, the trash racks will be removed.
Perfect.
Good?
Good.
Okay, so now we move on to the count window crowder, which is TDA 6.
Okay. This one I thought was dead, but then I realized... still got some life in it. It has to do with the crowders. When we are required to reduce or open them up all the way at night to allow better passage, because the thought is that we're potentially, when we have a pinch down so counting can occur, that we're impacting fish passage. And come to find out, the Dalles is the only one that has this requirement that I could find. Was everyone aware of that?
Yes.
Why is it only the Dalles?
Because they're special.
Is it automated? Is it something you actually have to push the button when you leave every night?
Yeah, yeah. And we can handle that. The concern is runtime, which we discussed at the last FPP meeting. The concern was runtime. If you run them twice a day, I mean, those things have given us problems before, and I don't want them to fail when they're stuck at their minimum gap. I don't know if you heard that, Gary, but that the opening up at night of the crowder, the Dalles is the only one that I could find in the fish passage plan. Actually, somebody had to point that out to me. That the Dalles is the only one that I could find that has that requirement.
It's open at night.
Yes.
It should all be open at night.
Point that out.
Sorry.
Well, and not just during the non-counting season as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
They should only be closed down when you're counting, actively counting. So we have a new issue.
Well,
right this
and,
way.
And I want to point out a couple of things that are stated in there. Like for Bonneville, it says if counting is temporarily. No, wait. One line. If passage is impaired by narrow count slot conditions, the count slot will be widened until proper passage conditions are achieved despite count accuracy.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now, this is because, I mean, this has history. We were watching, we had problems with fish actually beating themselves into the glass or the crowder years ago, and so it became a big issue, and we wanted to make sure there's as wide an area as possible through those counting areas. So, you know, we want them backed off as much as we possibly could for as long as we possibly could.
Also, on the first line of that, it says the count station crowder shall remain in the maximum width while visual counting and or videotaping is being conducted. And then, so that implies that it should be open all the way during the day, too. Maybe there's a word missing in there, the maximum width possible.
Maximum
width to ensure accuracy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, really. I mean,
so
wide versus 18 inches?
And now Walla Walla, I couldn't find, they have at least a standard among all dams that it basically said no less than 18 inches.
That's all it says.
But there's no, I couldn't find anything in there that said you need to move it at the end of the count shift or do anything.
I don't have that recommendation.
Hmm.
The problem is, we get out there, we all know it, you get out there and it's clear as day through the ladder and the damn counter's got it down 18 inches.
Mm-hmm.
They always do.
Mm-hmm.
I can go out there
oh, sure.
70% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you see the fish, you know, we all stand around and see the fish go through the window and they hit the upper end of that window and they hesitate and they drop back.
So instead of, I mean, I think the minimum needs to be there, but it's like the maximum needs to be where you start from. You have it out, and then it can come in if needed, but it just needs to be a standard between projects, one thing, and also to have it very clear of, like, especially if like, okay, well, it needs to be, if it needs to be out all the way at night, then I think it needs to be out all the way at night everywhere, so they have a...
Just leave it all the way open.
All the time.
Here's an idea for...
Well, you're not going to... Your accuracy, even right now,
so,
she's moving
see, that'd be
it
easy
in.
To do.
Remember, that was supposed to go to TAC, right?
An eye chart on there, and you have to be able to read a certain line, and they start it out, and they bring it in until they can read that line. Once they can read the line, then that's when they stop.
No, we need... What's the recommendation?
Well, if it's dirty, they can't see the fish.
That's a good idea. Just like black and white squares on it. Those black and white squares.
Like a single dish on the crowder.
It would have to be on the crowder.
Yeah, it's on the back side.
Right, but that gets dirty.
So do we need a recommendation here from the counting crew?
Well, this is an issue that's going to be debated back. I mean, the counting crews would like to have it as near as possible.
So,
and
the fish protection people would like to have it as wide as possible. So we have this.
So what do we need to do? Because we're running out of time. We've got a lot of stuff to do, and we could probably talk about this for 20 minutes.
Well, what I would say is, while the counters are working, they should narrow it down for their purposes. I mean, that's been part of what we've been doing. I don't think we're intending to change that. What the intention here was that when they're not working, that we would leave it narrow. And what people are saying is, no, we'd rather go back to wide open during that time of the, even though it's night, there's not that many fish passing. You know, there's still we have, upwards of 20% of our sockeye pass at night. There's still night passage, lamprey, whatever. So I would rather go back to, these machines should operate. They should be able to operate every day. They don't, then we got a problem with the machinery. So I would have it set up so that when they leave at the end of the day, they push the button, the thing goes back, and they come in, they bring it back to the set distance, whatever it needs to be. I mean, we can argue over whether there should be, cross-hatching on there that tells you when you can stop or whether it's up to the discretion of the counter.
If they start out in the morning, it's all the way out. They're not going to automatically move it in unless they have to.
Right. That's for you guys to carry out. You tell your folks, minimize that. Just because you're more comfortable with it being tighter doesn't mean it should be. So, but that's another argument. And I don't have a problem with entertaining that argument too, but that wasn't what this argument was started out
right.
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 Yeah.
So can we just standardize all of the language in the fish passage plan to say at the end of the day it opens all the way, and then in the morning when the counters come in they can bring it in as needed and then put it back in
winter
out.
When we're not using it or whatever.
Does that make sense?
Nighttime videotaping. Well, where do we want the crowder to be at?
Okay, well, we're getting into a discussion of what accuracy you want to have for adult counts. And that's another discussion. And we're not going to answer that here.
Right.
So, but that is a good point, and I think it's a valid point. Ed raises it.
Yes.
Greg raises it. Others people have, too. So it might be something that I would carry on as another topic to discuss. We have over the years, many, many, many times, and so why not do it again? I'd entertain.
Carry on.
We
have the Gary
Frederick
subcommittee.
Oh, I'm not going to. Sure. Ed Meyer. I want Ed in charge of this one.
One of the things that came up at the last FPP meeting was, can we just leave it out all the time and sacrifice the count?
Right. And that's
sacrifice the count, actually.
The way it's written, that's what it says at Dallas, that it will be out all the time. So
that wasn't the intent.
Not the intent.
Right. Yeah. But
tech will do a correction factor and work.
Well, I brought up last time, do we need counts at the Dallas at all? And I don't know.
We need counts at all.
Well, we do, but how much are we using those counts versus pit tag? And I don't want to step on people's toes here, but that question is out there.
Next meeting. Let's get a group together and some language and bring it to the next meeting.
Can you come back with a recommendation?
Standardizing,
This is an ad hoc.
Well, it's not going to be in the FPP. So do we have any issues with new language at the Dalles that needs to get changed for the FPP?
Added possible in there. Maximum width possible while visual counting.
We'll just do the open.
That's fine.
Close to appraise.
That's good. Then if we want to cut into that maximum width possible.
So then that line is not stripping.
Possible.
Correct.
So, for getting this language together, I guess it should be the project bios and Greg and I, since we're fish counting.
Yep.
Not gurus, funders.
Funders.
Okay, let's move on then. 6.6, McNary Transport 68F.
Actually, if I can do Little Goose, because that's
Little
the one
Goose.
We bounced.
Can you do it in 3 minutes?
No.
Probably not.
Likely not. the comments.
The peanut gallery.
The peanut gallery.
Hey, hey, hey.
Comes around, goes around.
So I emailed out a change form. I guess quick overview of the Erdic Little Goose trip. I thought it went really well. Had good participation, and I felt like we accomplished a lot. The goal when we went down was, in my mind, a couple things. One, first and foremost, was to try to address the adult delay problem and get that problem solved. And ideally, if we could do that, while keeping the weir in a maximum amount of time, keeping the weir in service, as opposed to, I know Gary, you've brought up in here, you hate this concept of, you know, a gate hoist, which shuts the weir off and then turns it back on. So we're compromising between, okay, now we're going to do an adult pattern, now we're going to do a juvenile pattern.
What do you
mean to this? Well, then you shouldn't have said it.
Misery loves company.
Bill's going to start hitting.
And here. So...
I didn't say that.
So the one goal was to keep the weir in and try to find a pattern that would work with the weir in service. And so I went... My impressions coming back were that we have some options that look like we might be able to keep the weir in service and not have to shut it off. And I'm hopeful now by using Spill Bay 8 as a regular part of our spill table that we will be able to reduce that adult delay while still providing good egress conditions for juveniles. And so with that said, you see a change form, which is my attempt to kind of boil down what some of the things that we learned at ERDC. One thing you don't have in front of you yet, unfortunately, is the spill tables. Sean Milligan is working on those, and then called me yesterday. He went home sick, and was trying to get them done for this meeting today, but just couldn't do it. So I anticipate having those maybe even by tomorrow, but just depends on how much progress he's able to make on that. So that piece you don't have in front of you, but you do have a change form that identifies some of the things that we worked on down in ERDC. And so with that, I guess I'll open it up for any comments. If you like the change form as is, we can have it short.
We have comments.
Okay.
I'm probably not the only one. Does anyone that was down there at the trip want to go first, or do I just going to pull, start shooting right now?
Russ, Bill, Jason?
Russ?
Well, I'm not sure who should go first. One thing is that I had a question yet.
Just a few of these things got the change form in.
And that is, Tim, you know, I tried to leave you a message. I know you guys are busy and trying to prepare. And looking at the current spill tables from last year's fish passage plan, and I assume as far as the turbine operation, the plan is similar. But one of the things that I see is that it looks like on the table one, for the weir and the low crest configuration, is that we try to operate turbine one, the priority turbine, within the higher end of the 1% range, but then try to even out flow through the other turbines that are on. And for example, at the table at a river flow of 78 kcfs, the plan is to run turbine one at 16, 2 and 3 at 12.4, and then number 4 at 13.9. From what I saw down there, I was wondering if we might do better under that type of operation with running turbine 1 at the upper end, 17.5, turbine 2 at 14.6, and 3 at 4 at the lower end, the 1% at 11.3. And so I had wanted to talk to you beforehand instead of on the F-pump call on whether you thought, you know, there was a good logic for evening out the other turbines that are on, or whether we might be able to provide better conditions for adults by loading as much as possible to that south shore.
So basically putting the same restrictions that we have on Unit 1 to operate at the upper end of 1%, to put that on Unit 2 as well?
Well, just try to move as much as we reasonably can towards the south shore type of operation.
You said 14. It sounds like it's a little wider than the 16, 17 Unit 1.
Okay.
Maybe Unit 2 has a little wider range, but still doesn't go down to that.
Yeah, that's just one thing that I, you know, think we should consider. Not, you know, you guys more know than I do, and we don't have to do this on this call now, but it's something that I think we should look at.
And so, but, really, what you're talking about is what the tables are going to look like. I can certainly talk to Sean.
Right. Well, not just what the tables will look like, but whether if we did try to load as much as possible to the south shore in the turbine operation, if we could A, provide better conditions for adult passage, but B, you know, would that allow us to use the spillway in the low crest mode successfully at a lower flow? Then, you know, I agree that the majority of folks at ERDC were willing to set 90 KCFS as the trigger, but I still am uncomfortable with that high of a trigger to make the switch to put the spillway we're in the low crest mode in. I think we can do better. And then one other thing is that I want to bring up is that, you know, we've been set and understand how policy works, and it's the hand that's been dealt us, but this hard and fast, we can only spill 30% at times, and we got the 30% for adult passage, but at time that hard and fast 30% makes it worse for adult passage, in my opinion. For example, at this 78 KCFS flow, I believe that if we ran turbine 1, 2, and 3 at 17.5, the upper end of 1%, we would provide better conditions for adult passage, but we'd be spilling 33% of the river, which, because of the policy set on 30%, we're not able to do. And it was one is that, you know, this is one where we're working on trying to figure out what we can do given the hand deltas. But part of my resistance is a long-term irritation with how we got stuck with the 30%. And it was, and life isn't fair, but it was an unfair deal for fish on how we got stuck with 30% at Little Goose. And it's not an issue that is going away. And it's one where I've been pushing our policy folks to talk to our MIA partners that we got stuck with a bad deal at 30% at Goose. It was a raw deal at Goose. Is that when we agreed to go to 30%, we were not told that Turbine 1 was out of service when we were delaying adults in 2005, and that it was put back in service at almost the same time we dropped spill to 30%. And I believe, from what I saw at the model, that Turbine 1 being out of service was the problem much more than the spill percent. And so we got, and fish got, a bad deal there, an unfair deal. And it, once again, leads to mistrust and distrust and questioning everything that comes out of this region, because it was a bad deal. And that is my resistance on a lot of these things, is that it's hard for me to trust my partners in the region when we get saddled with bad deals like 30% spill at Goose. That was an embarrassment, in my opinion, on how that came out, that we actually, the fish managers, had to go through and look at the operation tables to find out that Turbine 1 was out. That was a bad deal. So So I have some frustration there, and I really, I do not support waiting to 90 to switch to that crest on that weir into the low mow. If we had had that criteria last year, we would not have put the weir in the low crest for the spring out migration. And that likely passes more fish through surface routes, which the technical information that I've reviewed to me clearly indicates that putting fish through surface passage is more likely to return adults than powerhouse passage. And when we switch that crest to high crest mode or leave it in longer, we put more fish through the powerhouse and reduce subsequent adult returns in all likelihood. And so by moving spill to spill bay 8, we will set up a better pattern than we had last year. And so we should do better for adults. Yes, it didn't look as good to us, humans, standing up there watching the dye and the pieces of paper. But as we said several times, it may be just fine for the fish in the river. And so, yes, we have an unstable eddy at 70 KCFS when we're stuck with 30% spill. But I think that I'm very reluctant to give up juvenile passage, because even last year, with the adult passage delays we had, if you look at pit tag conversion rates from Ice Harbor to Lower Granite Dam, adult survival and passage was still high. And I think that the impacts to overall adult returns and wild natural spawning success from these delays is likely lower than the impacts of subsequent adult returns by running more smolts through the powerhouse at Little Goose. And so I'm not real excited, but I recognize that with the surface weir in the high crest mode and getting our reservoir 30% through the other standard spill bays, that smolt passage won't be that dramatically less. And so I'm not going to break the pick on the 70, 80, 90 top operation. But that when we get to the other side, I am going to be more adamant that we keep that high crest weir in down to 33 KCFS.
Okay.
Good statement, Russ.
Thanks.
I'm thinking about 80 myself. That as I read this language, 90, and then you have to have at least 7 consecutive days. That concerns me that we're not even going to get it in on time.
No, what
to
that
capitalize on the 90.
Just to clarify, what that 7 consecutive days was for. That's supposed to be a fish protection measure. What I mean by that is, if the STP forecast was to be over 90K for only 3 days, say, then you have to take the weir out of service for a day to make that change, and then take it out of service again to change back. And if it's only going to be above 90 for 3 days, do you really want it out of the weir out of service for a day or a few hours at least? On the front end and a few hours on the back end,
yeah,
to make that change. So that's what that 7 day period is there, is just to make sure that you have enough days over 90K to make it worth the effort and the fish effort in terms of worth the effort to put the weir in and out of service, because by making that change, you have to have the weir out of service for at least a few hours on both ends of that.
And I agree with Tim, you know, on how he described that. And yes, whatever point we end up with, how he's written it and what our intent is, I think, a good way to go. And I appreciate that we want to get it in before, you know, make that switch, if we're going to make a switch to the low crest, before the increase in flow hits, because a lot of smolts really migrate on that ascending limb of the hydrograph, And so we want to make sure we get it in before we hit whatever trigger we end up with, agree to if we can agree. And then, yes, we also agree that it's got to be of enough likely duration to make it worthwhile to make those switches on the front end and the back end, both in fish protection measures and in the time and cost to the project personnel. So I think that is fine, the way he's described it, the intent there. I think we're all in agreement on that intent. At least I'm in agreement on that intent. Okay. It's just the level of when we make this decision. And I recognize that, you know, if we put it in early at 70K, like I would prefer, and we delay adults, then we're caught in a decision whether we want to leave it in until the flows come up or whether we want to try to switch it back again and have several switches in a season. I know that would be challenging. But, yeah, I want to see about, you know, loading that south powerhouse, if that could help in addition to moving some of the spill bay 8 training spill. But, you know, even last year with that delay, it does not appear that we really impacted adult success that dramatically. And we want to avoid delay. We're all in agreement there.
So I'm still, coming back from that trip, I still feel that we significantly degraded adult conditions below 90 with that low crest we're in place. I think we made a dramatic change by putting the high crest we're in, which to me, from what I've seen in the data, that high crest weir is the same flow as our other RSW. It's not like we're putting a low flow option out there. It's just lower than the high, the low crest. But
right.
Survival's been high.
7K.
No, I'm saying it's 2K. It's about 2K difference.
Survival through that high crest weir has been...
I don't know. You've never done a test with
that. Is that one test with that high crest or that low crest test?
Probably low crest.
It's a low crest. Okay.
So
that's why I have some trepidation on sticking in the 90s. We've never tested it. Wow. I think it's going to be okay, but we also left TSW. We're going to be teaching Keaton 1 to 4% of urines at McNary, and there's some issues there.
So it's a little bit less. And concrete survival is 99% for Chinook and for Steelhead under that low crest. So it's a little bit lower than that on the high crest. It's probably still going to be okay. The difference between that and the adult conditions is pretty significant.
That's why
90K
is probably where I
want to
be still.
90K?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking there's other things that you can do. I mean, you can set it at 80. If you're seeing an adult pathogen issue, there's an easy solution. You go to a flat pattern for like 4 or 5 hours in the morning with adults move, you're probably going to move them out that way. These fish have been shown that anytime you give them the slightest opportunity, boom, they fly through. So if you think you're having a problem, at this, you say you've got low crest in at 80, and you say, oh my gosh, looks like we're having an adult problem. Then you go to a flat pattern for 5 or 6 hours in the morning. Daylight till 11 o'clock. That's probably going to take care of your problem. I don't think you have to be as hard set on like these magical 90 numbers that we don't really have a good feel for. I mean, that's the last time I checked. We have in-season management that can take care of some of these issues.
Well, it's difficult to do what you're describing without a hoist in, which won't be in place.
I said hoist, you say just close the unit down and go to a flat pattern. Just don't use the top spill weir for 4 or 5 hours in the morning.
But you have to close it.
And you can't close it or you're changing it now.
No.
So you're screwed like you're absolutely.
Right. Until we get to hoist in.
That's what I'm saying. That's a big difference in the model for
the mission. I just don't have much comfort with that model in the steam people. So I've gone down there, I've used it, we thought we had things figured out, and then we come back and we have bigger problems. Maybe you've got it all figured out, we've got things calibrated, it's all dialed in perfectly. I don't know. I still need to see how the thing's been calibrated or verified with prototype and testing. Until it's done, I just don't know how it's been done. So I'm not as warm and fuzzy with the hydraulic model. So I would say I'm just like, I don't know if 90 is, for 90, if you start having like flow conditions where you like say it jumps up pretty quick on you, you may not be able to easily get it out because you won't have the capacity at the project to take a unit, take the, some of the spillway out of stage out of service for a while. And then you always got 3 work period. So I'm just saying 90, that's usually, you hit 90, you're usually going up and you're going to be able to go up pretty quick. you don't stick around 90 very much. 70 or 80, you can stick around that.
Well, and it's not based on, we're not just sitting around waiting for it to hit 90 and then we start doing this coordination. We have this is based on forecasts. When the forecasts tell us that 90K flows are coming, we look at juvenile fish passages, we get on the phone and get a conference call. We do coordination with the region like we say we're going to do.
And I got to hope this isn't someone going to try to coordinate on Friday because no one's going to be around. That's what's gonna happen.
Okay, well then we can take the coordination language out. But
I used to say you assume do it. I would try to coordinate because you guys only have 40 work days up there anyway.
Yes. Well, okay, that's fine. I can pull it out.
Yeah, everyone. Tom, this is one thing that in the discussions there was, good commitment by everyone there to use not only STP but other forecasts and other, if you see conditions that make you believe that we're going to get to that 90 fairly soon, we can set up a call and discuss and make that decision. The whole intent is even with the Monday through Thursday work window, that the intent is to make sure that whatever level we pick is that we get the weir switched to that low crest mode before the spike and flows get down there. And I think with what we've seen in our ability with the Northwest River Forecast Center and the STP and us looking at the weather and snowpack conditions, that I think that I think we can accomplish that, and we're not going to get caught trying to make the switch when flows are too high and we can't do it. So I think we'll be able to cover that base. I think the question is number one is what we set up at 70, 75, 80, 85 with spillbay 8 passing some of that flow is going to be better than what we had last year. And, we can respectfully disagree on whether we think it's going to be adequate or not. But it will be better than what we had last year for adult attraction. The question is, at what level will it be adequate? And is the trade-off, if it's not adequate in adult delays, worth running more juveniles over the surface weir? That is a tough trade-off to make.
Okay, so if we can look at the change form, the first paragraph or first number is, number one, we're starting the fish passage season in with the weir in the high position. If we can add, Tammy, do you have that change form pulled up? Just add behind SW high position there in the second line. Just add in brackets elevation 622, just to make that clear. So can we, if everyone has a change form in front of them now, can we approve number one?
Yes.
For this next year?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, we got that one done. Number two is criteria to change to the low crest position. And right now it's at 90K. But it's not actual flows at 90K. It's based on forecasts going up so that we can get the low crest weir installed before we get to 90K.
Personally, I'd pick 80 because if we make the changes with the turbines like Russ is suggesting, you guys supposedly have a better pattern that now. Mm-hmm. You think you're going to make delay better, and if you're only going up, we've seen adult delay only gets better or decreases after 80.
Yeah.
I'd be using 80 as your
criteria. Three good points.
I mean, and the fact that we've never tested survival through this high crested weir, I'm going to defer more towards keeping things closer to what we've had in the past years and going to more using an operation we haven't tested as much. Sure, it might only be a 2% survival difference, but
2%.
I don't like giving up
2%
if I don't have to.
Yeah.
That's pretty. That's a lot.
Okay. I guess
that's. I wish I had taped that. I want to say the same thing. I'm at 80.
At 80.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with what Jason.
I don't have the faith that if we wait, if we have 90 in there, I don't have the faith that the Corps is going to get this done before the freshet, before we get to 90. I want to see 80, and that be the trigger so that we know we're going to get that low weir in.
And they tell you they're going to try, but
yeah,
things might just occur that just preclude you from getting it in. I mean, I think 90 is on a steeper part of the curve than 80 for when you see flows going on.
What's your thought on that? On 80, Jason?
It's too low for me. From what I saw in the model, it was a big difference. I think when you get up into these, I mean, you get up to 80 and 90, your percentage of spill, your percentage of surface flow is
still isn't changing.
Yeah, but your percentage of surface flow is decreasing every KCFS you go up. That your two KCFS you're adding with your low crest weir becomes smaller and smaller percentage of total river. So it's, to me, it's not worth degrading the adult conditions like I saw down there. So, I mean, I'm not going to break my pick over either. It's probably in the noise, but there was a difference that we saw in that model. Mm-hmm. I figured we were down that trip for a reason, and I shall believe what we saw.
So you don't think the other changes you've made are going to be beneficial?
We were looking at Bay 8. We didn't look at Russ's turbine idea, but we had Bay 8 optimized as much as we could. So I think we have the best possible combination there for adults and juveniles. So for me, I deferred a little bit more to the adult end on this one. I think the risk to juveniles is pretty small. I think we've proven that we have an issue with adults under certain conditions there. So.
Okay. Russ, 90, 80, where are you?
Well, it's one is that I, you know, like I said, and just like Jason, you know, and it's one where we're talking about legitimate differences of guessing what the fish are going to do is what we're doing. We're not omnipresent, we're not fish, we don't know what we're looking at there. It seems like, you know, I said I wouldn't break my pick over 90 on this one. I heard a couple of the other sand managers say they'd be okay with 80 if that could reach consensus, and we don't want to reach consensus and hurt fish, none of us do, we're all in that same boat. But if 80 is something that we could agree to, that'd be fine. And I'm not going to break pick over 90. I still think we could operate down to 70, but I definitely was in the minority down or dirty on that 70 position. So I'm not going to break my pick. I still would prefer 70, but if we reach consensus of 80, I'd be happier than 90. But and you know, we're going to definitely, all of us, I think, are going to be watching those adults and do a better job of looking for indication that we are delaying adults down there.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the purpose of the trip, the main purpose of the trip was to solve the adult delay issue, and with that, it was pretty clear to me that. At 90K, when we looked at both configurations of the weir, low crest and high crest, based on everything we saw at the model, 90 K was about the low end that we could operate that weir in the low crest position and still have some hope that we're going to not delay adults. I don't know. I guess we're kind of at Scott.
A question on the what I heard Bill say is he's concerned that you won't be able to get the thing changed in time. So how long will it take to actually make the change? It says three working days here. Is that three project working days or three business days or? The reason I'm bringing it up is there might be a way to get 90 to be the criteria, but that we make sure we get the change to occur quick enough to satisfy the interest in getting it done.
Are you going to have crews working over the weekend? If you'll guarantee me that, I'll be much more flexible. But you're not going to guarantee that, so. Mm-hmm.
That is one of the constraints.
Is it three working days? So, like, if we say on a Friday, then they or a Thursday, they can't get it until Monday.
Just has to be a push button.
What's?
I would think it can be. I would think it can be, if these conditions were reached on a Friday morning, I think this would be, we would tell the projects they have to prioritize this for a Monday. So.
That's year three.
Yeah.
But it's not present yet. But I think we can live with three as long as that's, you got to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's no less than, I mean, if you happen on a Wednesday, you can probably do it on Thursday.
Right.
So, right. Three is the longest you should.
Yeah, certainly I've talked with the project, and in fact, you know, last year I thought the project did a really good job of being responsive. As soon as I would typically give them a call the day before to say, hey, we're doing some final coordination on this, but it looks like we're going to be ready to go on this tomorrow morning. Can you make it happen? And they always did make it happen.
Yeah, they did pretty good.
It took
so if it's Thursday, it doesn't happen until next Tuesday. That won't happen.
It can happen in that instance if triggers were met, you know, at 5 p.m. on Thursday.
Let's get it done Friday. Nope, nobody working on Friday.
No, I know. Tuesday. That's what I just said. It would be Monday.
But that's the worst. That's the worst Tuesday? Outcome.
Huh? Would it happen Tuesday? No, it would happen Monday.
It's a one-day response, not a three-day.
Well, because you're not because you're counting the weekends. That's what I mean. If we're saying it's 3 days,
it's a one work
over
day.
The weekend.
It's
yeah.
a one work day. That's what I'm hearing.
It can be.
It sounds like it is a one work day.
That's what they've been doing.
That's what we've been able to do.
Yeah. Now trigger, and then the next day they get it done.
We've been able to do that, and now
guarantee it.
No. I can't guarantee that they're.
You got a labor issue here. It's labor union, and the only person that can tell them that they have to come in
on
is
weekend.
The operating.
I'm talking about the Monday. If it's Monday,
know,
you guarantee on Monday that if you tell them one day, they'll get it done in one day.
I can tell you that it last year it worked very smoothly. We
it's
got
getting your paycheck.
It's a union.
Well, it's still. I mean, you got to do a certain amount of work for your paycheck. Get it done. Right?
It's not that easy.
It's not that easy, Gary.
I wish it was. Believe me.
It is for the rest of us, but not for them. It's interesting.
For the rest of us.
It's tough.
Let's bargain. I got to be here. I'm expecting to get some work done.
So,
is there a way to say if it occurs on Thursday or Friday or Saturday or Sunday, it will happen on Monday?
Yeah, that's what I'm fishing for.
I'm fine with that. Like I think we can. We can.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
That's only day response. Monday. I mean, that's the same thing.
Correct. Well, during
he's
the weekend,
guaranteeing it. Yeah. Guaranteeing the one-day response. Thanks, Tim.
I will. I think the best thing we can do is put in if this happens in that three-day weekend, we'll prioritize crews and have this occur on Monday.
And that's why you put three in there because you're trying to guard against the weekend issue.
Right.
Knowing that last year they did a great job. Last year before it's a great job. We hope they continue doing that for the weekend. You had to get some language that covered you for a weekend.
Right.
So always saying it'll occur on Monday if it happens Thursday through Friday or Thursday through Sunday.
So I guess what the way this is written is that this is the change is going to occur 3 days prior to the stream forecast predicted flow of 90. So in practical terms, that's going to happen. It is likely to happen at 80. You know, the weir is likely to be the low crest weir would likely be in place somewhere around 80. But the trigger is we're going to put it in 3 days before the STP says 90. I mean, we can drop that and say we'll put the weir in as close as possible to 80K based on a bunch of different contingencies.
Well, you can say if your predicted flows are going to be occurring during the non-work window, you do it the previous, and if it's after, then you can do it that Monday. I mean, mm-hmm. That's really the issue.
Yeah. That's why it feels like the three working days, you know, if our STP forecast predicts 90K flows on Monday, and we get the STP on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Tuesdays and Thursdays they'll generally come out, but again, there's always variability. Sometimes you expect it to come out, and for some reason it doesn't. So that
but
said,
if we implement what's written here, we get an STP in front of us Wednesday morning, and we're looking at it, and it predicts flows above 90K to start on Monday. We have this in place 3 days before those predicted flows. We would have this weir in place by Thursday, before crews leave.
Yeah, and I'm looking the other side, because the other side comes out on Thursday. Say the Tuesday one isn't the same, things going to change. Whether the system changed, the Thursday one, which you wouldn't get by until Friday, shows up that what it is going to change. You're not going to do that until Monday, so you're not going to really get that in until Tuesday.
Is that what the argument's about here, really?
Well,
or is it about the actual trigger?
I think the bill said it's 80. I can't believe you guys can see a difference, 10K CMS difference from 80 to 90 at that little goose model. But we have trouble seeing differences. And you're talking basically 2.5% change in the lower crest weir at 80 from 7.5 to 9.5. That's a 2% change of flow over that weir. You're telling me you guys were calibrated enough to be able to detect that difference? When I've gone down to look at some of his other models, and we're looking at where you start seeing 50K changes, and we can't see a
difference.
Yeah.
You can see changes. Well, they're
the
real ones.
Yeah.
They're the real ones.
Sir.
The model, that's, we spent millions to build this thing.
What's the point in the model? This model
shows a lot better. When you get down to 60 and 50, you see changes in it. But, up at 80 and 90, I didn't see any changes.
That's why I'm saying the difference between 80 and 90, to be able to detect that kind of difference, 10K swing.
It'd be interesting to see our scores.
And again,
everybody there saw it.
I don't see any problem with
80. 90?
But I like 80 because I'm more comfortable that the core is going to get it in them.
That's what I'm
saying. If we have this trigger at 90, that's whether you get it in at 80 or whether it's 90, that's not so important to me as long as it gets in. See, and if you're waiting around for the 90, it might not get in.
Can we leave our change form as it is? I think we have that buffer of 3 days before the predicted flows based on STP built in here so that it will be in place before 90. But if we set it at 85 for our trigger, I start to get uncomfortable when we start getting lower than that.
If you go 85 and you guarantee that you'll try the best you can at one day, I can probably look at that. Since you guys have looked at 85 in the model, then we're both in the dark on that one. So there you go.
We didn't look at 85 in the model. We looked at 80 in the model and looked pretty bad.
80 looked bad, 90 looked pretty bad. So
90 looked marginally bad, but not so bad that it made our stomach turn.
It looked bad as from an adult standpoint?
Yeah.
What about, just to throw one other thing out there that you don't want to think about, but as you're on these high increasing flow slopes, that's often when we start seeing a market response from juvenile hot migrants, too. So, that's what I would be worried about, that is that you're on the leading edge of the fresh, and you could see a lot of steelhead, especially coming through at that time, which you're going to use these surface routes.
So we might have to wait a day or two because of that. You don't want to be taking the weir out of service for even a day.
When you have
if you're right
numbers,
in the middle of the steelhead migration.
Right.
That's going to hold them up in the forebay over that whole period.
And that's why we have language in there about formation.
That's another reason why, when I think about it, I want that flexibility of getting that thing done before
that happens. That's what
hits the project.
Exactly.
Okay, Tom, I heard you say we have our language here. We have coordination built in. We'll be talking to folks.
And I assume you're going to, I would say plan and start moving forward. Let people know. Send an email. Say, hey, we're going to switch it out. If someone has a problem, let us know. And then if we think you should do it earlier, we'll, of course,
emails.
Send emails and send emails. I wouldn't try to bog this down with a big coordinating process and say, we got to wait until it was coordinated before we do something. I would make the plan to move forward, coordinate, and if there's a problem, people, it's almost upon them to...
Red flag.
Okay. Do you have everybody around the table enough to actually make your decision at this point? There's people missing. I don't know.
I'm missing a couple.
Dave and Rick Kruger and out of Washington has a voice in this one or not, but there's, I haven't heard.
So if we keep the language like it is, we'll do, and I'll talk to those other people.
Sounds like you're moving on.
Well, we've got it. We can keep talking about it.
I mean, you need to move on today. But are you moving on with your decision?
I think we need to have something down here that I can then bring out. We can follow up with a call to Rick and Dave.
Well, I figured it's going to be well off Federer because we're going to delightful time to discuss this. And you'll have your finalized one by then, won't you?
So, can
sweet.
I, for number two and number three, then, if I change 90 to 85, that's uncomfortable to me. And so, if we change that both figures to 85, and I shop that with Rick and Dave, since they're not here, our folks.
Is Steve on the phone? Steve Richards?
Steve, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Are you good with 85?
You're talking about moving it to 85.
In number two and number three on your chart.
Those are on their way up.
And on the way down. It's the trigger is 85 instead of 90.
Now, I was thinking 80 on the way up would be a good trigger because flows in the springtime ramp up pretty fast.
That's what I was trying.
That makes sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But on the way down, they also drop. I'm not sure if they drop as fast on the way down as they do generally on the way up.
Well, it's not quite as important then on the way down because you hopefully the migration has run its course as they come up and peaked on the way down.
You're
changing it out.
On the way down is when we're going to start hitting those summer Chinook.
Yeah.
And start balling them up. Or the late migrating springers. But for... I'm trying to surf between two different documents here. On the way down, I on the paragraph three, I think 90 was pretty good.
Okay.
But you know, 85 probably wouldn't make much difference. We're only talking maybe a day or two or something.
Okay.
You know, between flows being 90 kcfs and 85 kcfs.
Instead of 85, it's 80, right?
And then let's have something like falls below 94 that you want to couple like. I've already started eating my stomach despite the whistle.
Well, I mean, we got a long way to go here.
And we're going to start eating at 1 o'clock, right?
Well, okay, I guess we can just...
Cam?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. So for paragraph 3, I think 90 was a good number to shoot for.
Okay. We'll keep paragraph 3 at 90.
Well, I would respectfully disagree on that. And that on the way down... It's easier to be more flexible because, you know, making that switch, we can be watching and, you know, if we're delaying adults, making that switch and switching it, we're going to make it once for the season. You know, the tough one, and I agree on the front end, is dropping to the low crest mode and then delaying adults early in the season before we got more hydrograph coming, then we're going to be in a tough spot. Do we want to switch two times in that early spring or leave it in the low crest if we put it in too early? But on the way down, I wouldn't go up. I would keep it at the same trigger because on the way down, like I said, if we find out that we're delaying adults and our trigger to switch from the low crest to high crest on the back end is too low and start delaying adults, it's pretty easy to make the call to make that switch because we're going to be switching it to the high crest for the rest of the season. So whatever we agree to, it should likely be the same on both ends.
Okay.
Sorry, Steve. I disagree.
That actually makes sense to me to keep it simple. We have one trigger that we can settle on the way up and on the way down. So I've got to plug something in. For now, I'm plugging in 85 into number 2 and 3.
Okay. Is that to be compromised? Everybody's equal.
and then come.
Yeah.
Perfect. No one's happy.
Ross, are you
reasonably
at least failing to be really objectionable about 85?
I wasn't going to be really objectionable about 90. It's on the other end that I'm going to get fired up.
Okay. So, 85, Tom is good.
This is easy.
Ross is good. Jason's good. Bill's good. Steve Richards is good.
Sure.
Okay.
Clearly talking good. A couple of days.
So nailed 85. We'll shop it with Wills and Rick. The other thing that we've added from your change form is at the in number 3, when it says discharge subsequently increased above, it'll say 85K for at least, to add the language Tom said.
Shut for your number.
3 consecutive days.
You got 7 here.
I'm talking in number 3.
I say, do you want to use the same language? I don't care. I would just keep it consistent.
Yeah. What I had here was if and stream flow forecasts indicate continuing lower river discharge.
I think you probably want to call and make sure everyone's on board that they think it's continuing lower discharge. Either have a hard number in there, or that one you are going to want to get a call and get everyone to buy on.
Say crystal ball.
Yeah, grab my favorite TVs and I'll tell you you're right or wrong.
Okay. At the end of that first sentence, I'll add and stay below 85K for at least 7 consecutive days. Good? We're consistent?
Sure. And then we'll be talking because you might have a cold snap and you have to let it
cause
some change.
We might be operating with that.
We got 1, 2, 3 done.
1, 2, 3.
Halfway. Well done.
No. Are you kidding me? There's more?
Yeah.
More?
There's page 2.
That was the easy one.
That was the easy one.
Good God.
This is really the last one.
Number 4.
I think. Let's skip number 4 for a second. 5 and 6.
5, the only thing I would suggest is, Russ, we talked about this yesterday, was if memory serves, units 1 and 2 are the big units, 3, 4, and 5 are the smaller ones. Russ is caught. Is it the other way around?
No, it's 1, 2, 3, and
4. Yeah, 1, 2, 3.
Why don't you go bigger than 4 and 5?
Break till no, 1, 2, 3 are the same size units,
right? Yeah.
But they're the smaller.
They're the bigger ones, aren't they? I'm going to go up to 17.
They're the smaller units.
However it goes, I'm saying take four, the five, family six, units, 1, 2, four, is it, I'm assuming it's 3.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3.
Plus it's constantly going to 17 and 1. And then try this heavily loaded number 2 besides the 4, 5, and then out. Trying to basically do more of a southern powerhouse increased loading. If that's something you guys shop that around, so you guys think you can do it,
big
we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Is that something that you guys are okie dokie with?
I just need to make from a concept level, yeah. I want to talk to Sean about that, just to make sure I'm not missing something. But
what's your guess?
GDAX.
So. Number 6 here, I think, is simple. It just says when the weir's out of service, we use a uniform pattern. Okay.
32.
We have the change form wrapped up except for number 4. And you could tell I put in 3 different numbers to pick from. Because we discussed 38, 35,
and 35. We're all unhappy.
Yay!
I'm
going to
let Russ
steal 3 units on at that time.
So while you guys are working on this, there's going to be a lunch break here till 1. And then you're going to come back.
So the longer we talk about it, the less lunch we get.
That's right.
Perfect.
Because we got a whole bunch of stuff to cover. So you guys can wrap this up or come back to it. But a lot of people need to eat something.
Yeah. All right. If folks that are interested in this issue, I'd like to push through for the next 10 minutes to nail this down.
Okay. What's the chorus lead off? What number are you guys picking up?
Based on our work at the model, 38K was weird.
Let's choose under for half an hour. I'm going to be a sandwich.
Where are you at?
I'm more towards the lower end. 35 is 33. I'm going to take a look at the table and see if there's a big change over those two. I feel more comfortable because 38, hell, we're at 41 right now. But I don't know. I'm not strong on this one. I could shoot the 35 and probably live with it, but Russ is probably going to say 33, so God only knows.
I think we see problems there.
Bill?
I think I bet 33.5, because that seemed to be, when we were looking at the model, that seemed to be the lowest amount that we could go to, where you had one training bay of spill over next to Bay 8, over next in Bay 8 for adult passage, and you had the RSW open. So that seemed to me that described as 33.5.
Okay.
And I think that's good for adults and it's good for juveniles. The minute you go below that, you have to give up that training bay over at Spill Bay 8, then you give up adult passage. If you go below that with the weir, then you're giving up your weir, your best passage. That's why I'm
here. Bob?
Bob?
Bill.
Bill?
Was it 35 or 33.5?
That's why I was thinking 33.5. 35.
Didn't you get tested at 35 with your last test?
35, you got one more training spill bay open. One stop.
That gave you spill in 2 and 8? Yeah. As well as spillway wear in 3, or yeah. Number 1?
Yeah, it'll give you a one stop opening in bay 2, one stop opening in bay 8.
So that last run that you guys did, that was at 33.5? The very last one of the day?
It might have been, yeah.
I'm down there somewhere.
You must have faded it by that time.
So for me, I'm with the core on this one again. I thought that things looked much better for adults at 38 than they did at 33. For me, the benefit of the weir is a little unproven for sub-drones especially. This is the one project we've seen the weir be equal effective from a passage and survival standpoint. So you've got 1 year data saying that we'll do this, which is, you got to listen to it. But it's one data point. So for me, I'd be more comfortable at 38. I could probably land at 35 and be okay. 33 seemed too low.
Where did you put your training bays at 38?
I think you had 1 and 8 and 1 right next to the weir, right?
You got one more.
Was it 2 next to the weir?
2 next to the weir, possibly. I can't remember what it was, but it looked. Yeah. I don't have to give a front of it.
3-1 stop bays.
No, it basically is that between 38 and 33, looking at last year's table, that we basically, what we're doing is changing the proportion spill with the same operation with the spill aware in the high crest mode, one stop in bay 2 and one stop in bay 8, and the proportion spill goes 28, 30, and 32% as we drop down in flows. And it just means we have less and less, and it is dangerous, flow through turbine 1 is all we're doing, that the stops in the spill base stay the same as we go from 38 to 33.3 on this table in total river flows. And the points that I'd like to make is that, to me, this one is easier to err on the side of the juveniles, and that is because the proportion surface passage will be different with the spillway we're in the high crest mode versus 30% spread out with the deep spill gates. There will be a difference, and we'll run more fish to the powerhouse. And if we can once again monitor adults, and then it's a much easier decision if we seem to be delaying adults to quickly agree that, yeah, we're delaying adults. This shut the surface weir off. We don't have to open it back up again after that. And so we could watch it. And if we are delaying adults, we can make that switch. And so I talked to my policy folks, and they were on board with me fighting hard for this one, is we want to provide what we believe is better juvenile passage conditions, watch adults, and if we do delay, then we can make that switch. But let's don't plan ahead and knowingly short juveniles to avoid possibly delaying adults, knowing that moving some one stop to spillway 8 should provide better conditions. Let's test it and see if it does work for adults. We can watch adult passage and make a change pretty quick if we do delay, which should not reduce significantly adult returns and successful wild natural spawning. So we think it's an important time. And we've got to remember that, you know, 38 to 33 KCFS in the summertime can be very quick of a change, or it can be very long and drawn out. And it can occur in a time when we see an increasing trend in SARs in an increasing proportion of wild natural sub-yearlings passing this project.
Russ, one of the issues one of the concerns I have with what you said is, okay, well, we'll base this on adult information in season. Well, you look at this past year. When we were down on the 8th of August, when we got down to where we took the weir out of service at 32K in the river, we went from, you know, just a couple sockeye passing a day. Granted, when there's only 40 sockeye in the river, it's hard to tell you're delaying them. But we took the weir out of service, and that day we got 38 sockeye that passed. So now 38's a lot less than 10,000 Chinook that you had, but it's the same principle. Same thing with steelhead. We went from having 417 steelhead pass the day before the weir, and when we took the weir out of service, we were almost 1,500 steelhead passing. And so the problem is our sample size of adults to trigger an action on our end is so small that it's hard to use detect an adult issue that would then trigger us to take the weir out of service, just because we're talking about the last 40 sockeye that are trying to get upriver. We're talking about the first couple thousand steelhead coming upriver. So it's just at a point in the river that's hard to detect an adult problem. But when you make that switch, when we tripled our steelhead passage, and we went from single-digit sockeye passage to 38. That's why, I mean, it sounds good to use adult delay as a trigger, but it's really not practical when you're at that time of year in say, early August.
Well, as I mentioned, you know, when you were listing those table numbers that indicated when we made that switch, we saw a change, and I went back and looked at the graph of the goose and lomo passage, it definitely appears that we could do a better job of detecting if we're delaying adults than we did last year. Just because we didn't do a good job, it's going to be, you know, I'm committed that we'll look at this, and yes, we saw the same trend for sockeye and steelhead.
But Russ,
and there's going to be plenty of steelhead that we can watch and look for indications of delay.
But I'm telling you, last year I wrote up an email on this issue at this time of year and sent it to FFALM. We discussed it at FFALM, and you know, the feedback then was, well, it's just, you know, it's kind of hard to tell. And so, you know, I don't feel that it was based on inattentiveness. That it was just, you know, it's hard to be really compelling when you have these low numbers. I guess bottom line, I think based on our trip, 38K made the most sense. Bill, I know you saw that differently. You felt, are you comfortable 34, or you said 33.5?
I'm comfortable down to where you've got the TSW operating, and you've got one bay of train spill over there at
8,
spill bay 8.
Which is about at 34K in the river.
Around there, yeah. Yeah. I don't want to go below that, because then you go below that in spill, Tim, you're going to lose one of those things.
Yeah.
The minute you lose you lose the weir, it's bad for juveniles, or you lose the bay 8 draining, it's bad for adults. So
You can't.
Yeah.
And if
okay.
What worries me, Tim, is that if we have a low flow year, that we might, if you had it higher than that, we might end up taking the weir out of service July 15th. And then you have all of any fish. Yeah, that could have happened.
We could have, but this isn't a lot. We have 150.
I don't. Stranger things have happened, right? But then you don't have that weir available for a month and a half. Why are we even spilling, right?
Question.
Yeah, I know. Why are we? If we're going to be spilling, we might as well be using
danger.
Our gate that we want to use.
Wasn't the issue when you lose?
That's
when you don't have transpill next to your weir. So you need bay 8. You also need transpill bay 2, where you start shutting down your south ladder. Right?
That's I don't. That's I don't think you. Do
yeah. And according to last year's table, we drop below 33.3 is when you lose two training stops that you can put one in bay 2 and one in bay 8. And that's where I picked 33 is where I think we should be on this switch.
I thought we only had one at 33. Russ is saying we had two training spill bays at 32.
Yes. According to last year's table, that's what was we were running.
You have that in front of you?
Yeah.
I have it in front of me, yes.
I was talking to Doug.
Oh, sorry.
You both do.
It's table 2, about the 5th line down.
Yeah. 2 stops.
Yep.
If you have 2 stops, then you have 1 in 8 and 1 in 2.
Yeah.
So Jason's shaking his head. He's willing to go with that.
I'm just thinking, is that what we saw, though?
I don't think that's what we tested, though, was it?
That's what I'm remembering.
It wasn't?
No.
Well, we did 1 and 8, and then the TW, or STW, or TSW.
Oh, I thought we did that before we went down to just 1.
So we were at 30. We were higher, I thought.
Yeah, that was 35. I think it's 35 when you have a training bay in 2 and a training bay in 8.
Yes. And at 38, you have a training bay in 2 and a training bay. As I said,
you have
the training stops are the same in that flow range, is the best we can do.
Yeah. 38 to 33.5
yes,
is always 2 stops to spill.
Right.
It's just your what the thing that's varying is you're going between 28% spill and 32% spill. So that's what's changing is.
So yeah, I mean there was a difference, a big difference for me between those two.
If you cut back on that unit 1 operation flow at that level, you may lose that south side.
We almost lost that south side after room number 2. So.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like well, you know, unit 8, spill bay 8, will help with the delta that sneak into that north shore hole back there. Under that situation, but I'm afraid that you'll lose. I mean, you already lost your north powerhouse entrance, but I'm afraid you'll lose your south powerhouse entrance too.
That's what I remember too, Steve. You lost that south.
Basically, you're right on the razor's edge, and that's if the model's accurate. You know, because.
So I guess.
So what are we going to do?
Bottom line
35?
Is, I was convinced after being at the model that 38K made the most sense for the trigger, but I'm also willing to be a team player and step it down to 35, down to accommodate issues. Now, I think, Bill, I think if I heard you right, you said kind of the same thing. You would have chosen a lower end, but you're okay at 35 as well.
Yeah, that's
fine. Jason?
Yeah.
Hey, Tim?
35? Okay.
30.
Tim?
Yeah, so.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I looked at all these historic flows here recently, and once you start getting into the mid-30s, you know, your flows generally drop off very, very fast. So, I mean, you might be talking, you might not even have a day between 38 and 33. It might just go straight from 38 to 30.
Yeah.
You know, that's not uncommon to see it drop real quick like that.
Yeah.
I don't think if you go up 35, you're not really thinning that bad.
So Steve...
The next thing about 35 is you're putting some extra water through unit one while you still have your two training spills going on.
Steve and Russ, we just... everyone here in the room, including NOAA, BPA, CritFic, and the Corps, is all on board saying we can live with 35K as the trigger. Steve and Russ, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'll be okay with that.
Okay. Yeah, I am too.
Okay.
It's all about compromise here.
Got it.
Well, it's been 150 here, and I haven't had lunch yet.
We're going to lunch.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, thanks, guys. We're going to take a break for lunch and be back here. People are coming back at 1.
Like 1:15, probably at the latest.
Yeah, I'm not even leaving, so.
Hey, Russ?
Yes.
Can I give you a call on the phone here in a little bit? Or are you busy?
No.
Well, I was going to try to eat some lunch, but...
No, you can't eat and talk at the same time. We do it all the time at our house. It's not pretty.
Yeah.
So, I can talk to you later.
Definitely do that.
Can you give me a good time to call you?
Yeah, tomorrow? Tomorrow I'll be in. That'll be no problem.
Okay. And can you give me your office number so I don't call you on your cell phone?
Sure.
You got to lower
code 208.
You got to lower the bar.
334-3791.
You want
no extension?
No, that'll go to a receptionist and they'll pass you on.
Oh, your firewall.
Yes.
Okay, Russ.
All right.
Have a good day.
You bet. I'll talk to you guys in 20 minutes here or so.
That should be all the changes that I'm aware of. Except if you
Steve
has left the conference.
Russ Kiefer
has left the conference.
You'll get some food. You're going to have to put something in about for Dvorak, too, there, too.
Yeah, I'm leaving that to...
Okay.
Which is fine. I said at the last FBOM, we plan on all day.
It's in effect February of last year. So we're going to keep punching things.
I don't know. And this is one of the water quality issues. And, they are very.
So I have to go to this budget meeting.
I don't feel comfortable updating that. So I get where you're going. This is outdated. Needs to update. I think I'm unwilling to go to water quality folks right now and ask the question because I'm scared of the answer I will get, which is, it needs to be totally overhauled and blah, blah, blah. Can't do this, can't do that. Not the time for that comment. So I would either vote for deleting it because it's outdated or status quo, whatever.
But I mean, their participation is very important.
I'd say we delete it.
But it sounds like
it's fine. I can live with that. Same. If anybody asked me about it, I could say that it was our
favorite. But I mean, you know, having these people here is
don't talk about college culture.
Well,
yeah.
Those are nitpicky stuff that we don't need to provide in
there. This is the sturgeon issue he's had really fucking the trust issue. Because Ben didn't call people and went full circle and called the criminal and hey,
that should all be found in
there. You know, I got the phone call from Will saying, did you do this? And Russ sent me an email. Yeah, I was just like, you know, it wasn't
really shoot,
that
was a week.
It wasn't a bloodbath, it was normal tape.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah, no,
sorry, I gotta get going.
No,
I thought we were gonna wrap this up by noon. I was like,
good luck.
Everything comes.
You know, that's what I do, go down and get the food and bring it up here. I don't know why I didn't even think of that. Yeah. I was just going up. Yeah. Get a sandwich or something. What's that teriyaki stuff?
I love it.
What
the hell is that all about?
What'd you put in the cookies today?
You know, they're hearts. You were supposed to symbolize love and friendship.
I think they're arrows.
I think it suggests what should go in cookies next time.
Yeah, exactly. Holy schmolo.
You're getting pummeled.
Yeah.
Totally pummeled.
That's to be expected,
though. No, but that one, that's a different...
This is exceptional.
I thought that was... I think it's better when you're doing strictly a power-op, where it's kind of like, yeah, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. But when you're doing something that's strictly... It's not necessarily... 100% power off.
Hmm.
There deserves to be a little bit of
Testing and tags is completely for fish hops.
Yeah, that's
100%.
That's not the sword I would fall on, but that's where you have to stack the deck, and you just have to come in with some ludicrous issues, and then you find it to the winds that.
Well, so Tim, that's why Tim's slip low boost to the end.
What are you eating?
Kung Pao chicken, or not from the Temptations? Want some?
No.
Smells that bad, huh?
No, it smells good. Are there fish passage facilities? There's not, right?
Yeah,
fish passage? No. We tried two. We trapped them and forgot to haul them.
That what you're doing now is the email that Greg sent out that says something like here's the dewatering plans or the unwatering plans or the no watering plans or whatever. Is this what you're addressing?
No, what I am addressing right now is I was updating all the sections. There's section three?
Yeah, section
yes,
three.
Yes, I did all that. While I was sitting here.
Can I get whatever you're on?
I was listening to.
Get like a container of that.
Well, I wasn't listening to what was really going on because I figured they would tell me at some point what changes might be.
I have to say, though, Scott, I guess